miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, December 4, 2021. And welcome to the free range open air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are living in a synthetic reality where everything, you know, we are told by the powers that be in the mainstream media is pure unadulterated bullshit. That's one thing you can take to the bank. And guys, it's kind of to the point where I wouldn't believe anything I hear from the news. You know, even if they told me it was sunny outside, I wouldn't believe it till I stuck my head out the window and checked for myself. That's how bad it's getting, guys. And of course, you know, this really does go back to the famous quote by William Casey, CIA director appointed by the wonderful patriotic Ronald Reagan. Casey said, "We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." And I don't think that was idle chit chat. And, you know, the website I looked this up on, you know, kind of a normie website, it did confirm it's a real quote, but it also said that, well, fortunately, most CIA directors don't believe the way Casey did. So that's reassuring. It's not part of the internal culture of the CIA to intentionally deceive the American public on every front. And of course it is. And it, you know, that's never been more obvious than it is right now, isn't it, guys? I mean, seriously. The deception we see with Operation COVID Hoax is off the charts, guys. And as I pointed out, it really is this strategy of confusion where the experts contradict themselves daily. And then the viewer is left with a feeling of uncertainty and then, of course, is more malleable to propaganda and direction or misdirection. Yeah. And you know, the whole concept of news, you know, it's such a phony, strange concept in a way. You know, it's like we're supposed to believe that, you know, the networks, these big corporations, put on the news to inform us. Like they're really working in our best interest. So we know what's going on in the world. And of course, when you really think about that, that's such a ludicrous and naive assumption to make given the world we're actually in. And of course the opposite is true, isn't it? The news is really fully weaponized and truly a weapon against the public now. And you think about it too, like why does the news have to be like, oh, you know, such and such shot so-and-so and Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, did he kill those people or was he defending himself? You know, why does that have to be the news anyway? Does that really have anything to do with the kind of world that could possibly exist or the kind of world that we might want to create? the kind of world we're going to have to create, because this system is on the path of a controlled demolition. Make no mistake about that. But why couldn't the news be, you know, like, a group of guys got together and bought a big tract of land and are forming a sort of a new community where there aren't very many rules. People know what to do. And people are making their own things, manufacturing things. Why couldn't there be news about things like that? Or just positive things that might be happening around the world. I mean, there's a world of what they say, 6 or 7 billion people. You could surely pack a half an hour of stuff that's just mind-blowing and beautiful. Things that are happening around the world that are incredible and spiritual. But instead, it's always, you know, killing or shootings or violence or, you know, the same old crap just to keep the vibration down to, you know, the fear level, the fear realm. That's where they want to keep us. Because, of course, if you're in fear, you are more malleable. That's a well-known fact. And we're seeing the fruits of that kind of knowledge with this COVID hoax, aren't we? I mean, the fear has driven people to a place of absolute submission and non-reality, completely devoid of reality, walking around like a slave with a mask on, thinking that that's going to somehow make their life better. It's unbelievable. But another thing that's clear is, I think every day, people that are very suspicious about how things are unfolding with this COVID hoax and other events, every day, new people come aboard on our side. And I really do think the alternative media is making a big impact. I am positive about that. I really do think it's a slow change. It's like, you know, working on a very slow speed. But I do feel that once people start to see something's wrong, I don't think many people can go back. Like once you take that bit of knowledge into your mind, it's very difficult to turn back. So, you know, the game is to keep people ignorant and to stop them from having that first step of like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right to me. You know, that's the important part here, isn't it? Prevent that at all costs. Because we don't want to lose our control over the great unwashed herd. Yeah. And, you know, here we have these two events stacked on top of each other, the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. And then now this verdict or this event in Waukesha that's very strange. Excuse me. And so you look at the Rittenhouse thing, man, more and more parts of this story don't add up to me. And first of all, you know, it's very possible that this was a scripted event, guys. It is possible. But the photograph of that guy's arm that was supposedly shot by Rittenhouse, that is a doctored picture. That is not a real photograph. I've asked some people that know quite a bit about guns and gunshot wounds, and that ain't no 223 wound, that's for sure. So one thing that was interesting today, Giuseppe and I and Russ Winter and Daryl Wayne did a little roundtable discussion for Jim Fetzer's False Flag conference for this coming year. And, you know, we really were talking about the Waukesha event and the sort of bringing up the possibility that some of these things are hybrid events where, you know, something real happens and then maybe they do post-event editing or they piggyback an operation onto something that started out as real. So that's sort of a third position on these. It doesn't have to be all fake or all real, but one thing's for sure, you know, this Rittenhouse verdict was just set there to make us all respond emotionally. The same with the Waukesha thing. So anything that they put forward to us that is pure emotion that we're supposed to respond to purely on an emotional basis is suspect. And, you know, this Rittenhouse thing, so many people thought, oh, Kyle's a hero. He's a symbol for the right wing patriots. What a good man. And, but it turns out, you know, this is strange things are coming out about this guy. Like, he supported BLM and Antifa. At least that's what he's saying now. And it turns out the gun that he used to defend himself, he's going to destroy it. Have it just, you know, give it to the cops and have them put it in a gun crusher or whatever. And instead of, you know, say auctioning it off, it's probably worth a lot of money. He could probably get six figures for that thing by some guy with more money than sense. So yeah, that whole thing is strange. And maybe that did start off as real, but it's the whole thing was, you know, manipulated from there. But I don't know. It's possible Rittenhouse was an actor and the whole thing was scripted. And you know, with the Waukesha thing, it looked like this guy ran some people over, but you know, the speed of the car was really slow. There's no way he injured 60 people from the footage you see. There's just a lot of anomalies. So it looks like something actually did happen, but then now the event is sort of being managed and scripted post-production, you know. So that's another position for these events, because, you know, as they say, shit happens in the world, and sometimes things pop up, but then they can manage it from the back end, or even manage it as it's happening, depending on what the event is. But one thing's for sure, no matter what, the whole point of these emotional stories is to divide us and to just get an emotional response that's devoid of anything rational. And you think about it too, what does this have to do with the world that we want to have? I mean, even if these events are both real, what does this really have to do with anything? This is just something that we are fed by our masters to respond to. So it's always important to remember that too, man. You know, I just think that it's good to monitor the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media news, but don't believe a word of it, because it's going to get worse, guys. The level of lying and deceit is going to get worse, because, you know, you stack a lie upon a lie upon a lie, things are going to get crazy after a while. And that's where we're heading. So that said, I would like to bring on my main man, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I am doing well, Scorpio. Excellent introduction. Yeah, there's this whole series of events, Rittenhouse trial, the Daryl Brooks as the scary, unhinged black thug terrorist. It just seems scripted to me, man. I think your points are extremely well made.
Well, thank you. And, you know, during the roundtable we discussed with Daryl Wayne and Russ Winter, you found some really excellent footage that I had never seen before, which actually shows, you know, the guy, you know, definitely hitting a couple of people and apparently running one guy over. And, you know, but the thing that was so strange is the speed of the car was not very fast, man. It really wasn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, the another strange thing is that this guy's unhinged and I gots to kill me some whitey, right? I mean, he had the opportunity to literally plow into hundreds of white people at that parade, much like you plow a driveway with after a snowstorm. He could have rammed them, backed up, gone around, got some more. They're scattering in chaos, so that means he can accelerate to the next group, do the same thing. You know, he could have done maximum carnage. And as the videos, which everyone can go find, and you'll be able to, if you go to winterwatch.net, Russ has a story up there. And then Jim Fetzer's False Flag and Conspiracy, the High Strangers documentary we made, will be world premiering the weekend of the 11th and 12th at Jim's. I'm not sure where Jim's doing. Is it going to be jimfetzer.org or at his BitChute channel? But people will get that information in the days ahead. But it, the world premiere. And then after that, we'll put it up at our Brightian channel. Russell put it up at his website. So everybody will be able to see it. And it was really interesting. I mean, you, Daryl, and Russ had really interesting takes, and everybody's take was a little different. It was really a very compelling hour-long presentation.
Yeah, it was. And, Daryl made some great points too about how the need for sort of, you know, like, let's find out, let's get the autopsy records. Let's see the funeral and the family. And of course, it's so, what they've done is they've made this, you know, verboten, because, you're just an insensitive, you know, ass at that point, and you're cold hearted. And, you know, again, they're using the sort of the emotional side of human beings to cover up their crimes.
Oh, it's the classic victim mentality. You know, it's funny with the South Koreans, as we call them.
Yeah.
It's like for literally millennia, thousands of years, they've had the same game plan. It's essentially the classic story of the frog and the scorpion, right? It's like, oh, the scorpion feels so bad, and please help me, frog, take me across the river. And the frog's like, well, if I take you across the river, you're going to sting me. And no, I won't. Of course not. Why would I do that? I mean, I'll drown too. And so then the frog is like, finally, he agrees. And halfway over in the river, the scorpion stings the frog. And as the frog's starting to feel the venom kill it, and he and the scorpion are about to go under for the final time, he goes, why did you do it? And the scorpion response is, I had to, that's who I am. And that is what the internationalist Jew is. They are not human. They are members of this death cult that is their practices, their Talmud is like a handbook for serving the dark, Satan, Moloch, Baal, Beelzebub, whatever you want to call it. You know, it is evil incarnate. And the mutilations they do with the circumcision, they celebrate their holidays, like the last few days, I guess it's been Hanukkah. And the idea that they're celebrating the fact that Greece opened up and allowed them into the country. And then they totally, like the scorpions they are, they stab the Greek frog in the back and took the whole country down. And that's their holiday. I mean, what kind of sick shit is in these psychopathic inbreds? It's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, that you're spouting some anti-Scorpionism. I'm offended. No, it's kidding.
But it's an N, not an O.
Yeah. Right. Well, Scorpios get a bad rap, but one thing that's overlooked is Scorpios are the most loyal friends you'll ever have.
Well, I'm Scorpios a lucky guy then. I'm a lucky Giuseppe.
Yeah, that I've experienced that myself, being loyal to a fault. But anyway, you know, yeah, it was a really good conversation. I want people to make sure to check that out. It was really, really worthwhile, and some really, you know, kind of like plugging in some excellent thinking from different angles. And, you know, isn't it interesting too, Giuseppe, how, you know, as I was saying in the introduction, the whole concept of news is like this skewed thing. Well, let's find the worst things that happen. Let's find the violence and some political shenanigans and, you know, well, whatever, you know, and then just make that the whole view of the world, rather than, you know, you could have news of the most amazing things happening, beautiful spiritual things happening that happen every day around the world. But, you know, they don't want us to think about that kind of stuff.
Man, what a great point. I mean, it's really tragic. My first career was as a professional journalist. You know, I graduated in the early 80s with a joint degree in journalism and mass communication, radio and television. And I worked in the profession for 10 years. I have over 500 byline articles. Back when, you know, I wrote for the largest morning daily in the state of Wisconsin. Then I moved on to specialty a long form magazine and business journal articles, and then eventually specialty magazine publishing. And so, I mean, I was in that business, and I was censored back then. And they were like, tell you, look, you know, when you're low man on the city desk, you got to go and sit down at the Milwaukee courthouse where the jail is and where the morgue is. And then a couple times a night, you got to go down and talk to the coroners in the morgue and see what's going on. and ask him anything come in that I should know about. And some of the grisly crimes and murders that never made it to the paper, because they were, even then they were gatekeeping. We cannot have people that freaked out, even though they should have been that freaked out about the low impulse crowd, you know, the low, and they should have, it should have been a problem dealt with decades ago. And instead, and that is really a more of a problem for the 81% of blacks in this country who are working class or higher. I mean, the 19% that are just violent, you know, you don't even, you can barely call them human the way they conduct themselves so violently and psychopathically and amorally. It's really sad. And I mean, that could have all been fixed decades ago if the government really served the people. I mean, you could have like really structured their existence, made sure those kids get excellent nutrition, excellent structured education early on. You keep them out of trouble. You should have facilitated a work program so the fathers stayed in the marriage and the family stayed together. It could have easily been solved, but the internationalist Jew didn't want that. The internationalist Jew wanted the flotsam and jetsam in this society to be able to use as a weapon of fear for fear porn to foment and ultimately get the ball rolling for a communist infiltration of this country, which is now known as communitarianism, and this whole silly kumbaya bullshit that is just a fuzzy slipper on the jackboot on your throat. When the commies take over, they end up murdering millions. It's every time, because it's a Jew driven system that allows a totalitarian brutal regime that takes away guns and does it so violently. And it's unbelievable to me that we're witnessing this basically occurring right before our very eyes.
Yeah, I just see that. What's so clear to me, one thing that's this whole COVID hoax thing has really highlighted from my mind is just how society is being intentionally steered in the wrong directions, because they want to keep humanity sort of at this lowest point possible, this functional retardation, you know, level, because once the population gets too smart or too intelligent or too independent, none of the old tricks are going to work anymore. And, you know, then all of a sudden, gee, do we really even need a federal government? And I know Jim took issue with me when we were doing Need to Know News about that. But, you know, but it seems to me that the states have so much power already. If let's say you had a very minimal federal government, I mean, I just think the federal government right now is so far gone. There's no saying, well, we're gonna reform the federal government, don't worry, we'll fix it. I don't think that's gonna happen. So it just seems to me like it's maybe the federal government just needs to come to an end here, and then you'd have 50 states that are gonna be competing with each other to, you know, provide the best sort of lifestyle and environment for the people that live in those states. And it just seems like you'd have this laboratory of different ideas and systems that could be let loose, because the federal government is what wants to make everything unified, and you have to follow federal regulations and you have to follow this, or you're not going to get your money. And it just seems like it's stifling real innovation in terms of, like, because let's face it, we need to have new ways of interacting with one another, and, you know, a society that isn't so dependent upon government dictates. Because you can see how, even if, you know, you have good people running government, you're going to have problems. But we actually have wicked, evil people that have gone so far off the rails, they feel that it's their right to go ahead and kill as many people as they possibly can and cover that up and keep, you know, the game right now, I think, is just to commit mass genocide without anyone noticing.
That's exactly right. And as our dear friend and brother in arms, the great rebel madman Mike Gaddy, who just celebrated a birthday 2 days ago, happy birthday, Mike. And he has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Rothschild empire of the day, the banking empire of the day, really was pulling all the strings here in the incipient United Nation, and that the people who had lived here basically free for 150 years in harmony with basically in harmony with most of the Indians and with the French Canadians and everything had wanted that kind of autonomy. And they were pushing, as Mike, this is, you know, Mike can tell so much more lucidly, but the Articles of Confederation, which kept the power in the States, and the globalists of the day subverted that every which way. I mean, even the hero Patrick Henry, who tried so hard to fight it, you know, and then when he's given this amazing speech, a bolt of lightning hits outside and freaks everybody out, and they think he's a warlock. I mean, this is just crazy, the truth to it all. And even then you had the crypto Jew, Alexander Hamilton, trying to subvert. And so the internationalist Jew needs federalism, because federalism is a very easy step to globalism. And so I get Jim Fetzer's point that, you know, if the federal government did what it was actually supposed to do, which is negotiate international treaties, protect the borders, protect the citizens from all threats, foreign and domestic, and the internationalist Jew is the biggest threat to our country, and they're a satanic malignancy that is now eaten so far into Uncle Sam, it's Uncle Shlomo with stage 4 malignant Talmudism. It's just absurd to me. And yet, oh, but because that maudlin hack Steven Spielberg made Schindler's List, which was a work of fiction, and but nobody realizes that. And we could go on and on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, many of the founding fathers, especially the people who are the anti-federalists, really warned against a standing army. The standing army would essentially serve tyranny eventually. It's just a matter of time. And, you know, it's just human nature. You know, that's the thing that's so amazing about Mike's work, who I believe really Mike is like a national treasure in terms of his knowledge, because there's really not anyone else that can prove what he's saying. It's not a bunch of it. Mike can prove what he's saying with the documents. So here's the letter that they wrote to each other saying this. See? Oh, right. Hard to argue with that. But, you know, the human nature hasn't really changed. And so the same forces are at play. The international banking cabal that, you know, Alexander Hamilton was the representative of, essentially he was sort of the inside man, the secret traitor within the so-called founding fathers, that him and a couple of other guys really, you know, steered things in the proper directions. And, you know, I was thinking too, you know, America has this spirit of freedom. It really does. And it's evaporating rapidly, but amongst people who are, let's say, like, you know, I don't know, maybe starting their 30s or 40s up to really old people, you know, there really is a strong patriotic sentiment. And well, I guess loving freedom is different than patriotism, but there's people that really do love freedom. And I think that really goes back just to the idea that America rebelled against England. So many people put it into the context, oh, it's the Constitution. Well, no, I don't think so. I think it's just this spirit that was handed down from generation to generation of, like, you know, we're not going to accept a king. We're not going to accept this overarching government. And that has been handed down generation to generation, because Mike has proven that there's so many flaws in the Constitution. It's not even funny. And you could drive a truck through a lot of them. And these were put in place on purpose. They weren't an accident. They were actually changed by the Committee of Style and other people. You know, it's just very clear that the spirit of freedom, I think, was just something handed down from father to son and generation to generation. And it's not the Constitution.
Oh, without a doubt, man. It's absolutely not. I mean, and you know, what's even worse is the fact that the Talmudist parasite controls the media and has done so for centuries, realistically. Mm-hmm. That people think it was the British Empire. No, it wasn't. It was the Bank of England and the Sassoon Empire, which is the English what do they call that, that famous, I can't think of it, East India Trading Company, which had an army that was more than twice a mercenary army that was more than twice the size of the British army. So all the British Empire, it was not. It was the Jew banking empire back in the day, who attacked China with all its mercenaries and twice fought their way into the country to get them addicted to opium so they could have access to all the natural treasures of China. I mean, to me, it blows my mind that China does business with the Rothschilds and that Mao Zedong was basically controlled by Satanists, the Jews of the day, his handlers at Yale. I mean, if ever you would think there was a hive race that would realize that we have to wipe out these parasites, look what they did to us, you know, and instead they allow them in. They've got their Rothschild central bank. I mean, I don't know enough about China to speak authoritatively, but it sure seems like they are basically on a short leash from the Rothschild banking empire.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I totally agree. And, you know, we have to remember too that China sits on the board of the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. Right. So if China was some kind of rogue force, you know, they certainly wouldn't be sitting on the board of the Bank of International Settlements. That's the central bank of central banks. So they're in the club. And, you know, I think too, when China was so-called opened up, you know, by Nixon and Kissinger, you know, China was a backwards nation. It was agrarian and really not very developed. That all the infrastructure and factories have been built at lightning speed, you know, beginning in the 70s and then really took off after NAFTA was passed. That's when we essentially just handed over our entire manufacturing base to China. Well, first it went to Mexico, then it went to China, you know, the race to the bottom for wages. And China, you know, they're trying to make it, oh, we might have a war with China and Russia. Well, this really, I think, illustrates the way these wars are sort of controlled from a central source, just like World War II, World War I. Not that all the players were aware of it, but I think they put these pieces on the board and set them up and go, okay, let's you and them fight, you know.
Man, that is exactly right. If you think about it, you know, the traitor, pedophile Bill Clinton, sex addict, drug addict, cocaine addict, he was shown as a being groomed and met Kennedy as a little boy for like, and he's been, and you've brought up many times who is his real father. It could very well be a Rockefeller type of illegitimate child. You know, they really covet the Illuminati types, Hidden Hand, really covet the bloodline. And so this is always being set up, right? And so this guy, you know, even before Clinton got in 10 years earlier, they resolved the fairness doctrine, and all of a sudden that fat boob, a Rush Limbaugh, total controlled by the Zionists, is telling everybody, you know, oh, you know, you don't want to pay higher taxes, you don't want to. And all of a sudden, you know, these people who should have protected their pension, protected their unions, protected their families, they like sell the future out because they're interested in getting $3,000-$4,000 a year in savings, right? I mean, the short-sightedness and selling out your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, it just offends me. And all of a sudden, that's the foundation upon which now you have the MAGA movement and the MAGA-tards and the Make America Great Again, I might add, for the first time kind of thing. So
yeah, and, you know, that's interesting that you bring up Clinton, you know, with meeting Kennedy, because, you know, of course, the Rockefellers have huge holdings in Arkansas. There's state parks named after them. They have estates there. They've been involved in the politics there for a long time. And we're supposed to believe that, you know, Clinton was just this poor, good old boy that came from nowhere, and that he just happened to meet John F. Kennedy. And, you know, there was, of course, a film crew there to you know, film them shaking hands together. And then he goes on to be the youngest attorney general in Arkansas history, the youngest governor in Arkansas history, and, you know, on to be president of the United States of America. And all just from a good old boy from Arkansas. So, you know, it stretches credulity to believe the story, like so many of these elite, their stories just don't add up. Just like Barack Obama or Barry Sotero, whatever you call them.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't add up either. Not one bit.
No, not at all. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's laughable, this closeted homosexual who has to hide his school records, not because he wasn't bright, but because he listed himself as a foreign student, right?
Right.
And so you know, he and there's pretty compelling evidence that his birth control, I mean, his birth document, his birth certificate, that's what it's called, was was Forge, the poor forgery. Jim has done a ton of work on that, and Jim Fetzer, that is. And so I don't know, man. And then, you know, if Michelle Obama is a woman, it's hard to believe. I mean, with these various pictures of her dancing, and there's these people who, again, the whole satanic internationalist Jew agenda is this transhuman agenda, and putting these trannies in all types of positions of celebrity instruction or celebrity worship. And there's people doing some really compelling work to show that a lot of these people are not women, but trannies who are, you know, spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to make them look like gorgeous women. And I mean, holy cow, that is a bizarre rabbit hole to go down, but it's hard to not see what they're showing you when you watch. I know there's this YouTube channel, I can't think of the name of it right now, but they put a lot of time into it, and it's pretty wild to watch all that.
What did the YouTube channel show, Giuseppe?
Oh, a lot of people who we think are women are not, you know.
Oh, yes.
Comes to mind, like Jennifer Lopez supposedly is a tranny. So that's really wild.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just happened to go, I went out to a movie for the first time in, I don't even know how many years, at least probably a decade. And I, to a theater, you know, actual theater, and mm-hmm. saw The House of Gucci, which was, you know, Ridley Scott movie, and Al Pacino's in it. So I, you know, anyway, it was a very well done movie, to be honest. But you know, Lady Gaga was in there, and I'm telling you, man, something ain't right there. Cause they had some footage of her, like kind of in a short skirt, and you could see her, you know, her top, you know, she had a bra on, but her low cut top, this very boxy square body, you know, very strange. And it's interesting that, you know, they're kind of telling you, cause they're saying Lady Gaga, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just amazing the extent of the deception that, and yeah, this gender bender kind of stuff where, you know, celebrities and people aren't what you think they are. It's just all part of this synthetic reality. They want to have humanity completely bamboozled on every front. It's really incredible. Yeah.
That's so true. I mean, literally bamboozle on every front. So part of their dark magic, their satanic magic to deceive and then at the same time tell the Goyim cattle what they're doing so that doesn't bounce back on them according to their own perceived rules. And yeah, Lady Gaga is a perfect example. I mean, that's a dude for sure.
Yeah, there's something really off, man. The proportions of the body aren't right. Just the squareness and the you know, her ass just, or its ass just didn't look right at all, man. It's just really disturbing, let's say. I know people have gone deep into that. It's a pretty deep rabbit hole. It, you know, it's hard to know on some of them. I, you know, so I would try to err on the side of caution going too far over the deep end with that, because there's some people that think everybody's a tranny and
right,
you know. So it's, again, it's just, you have to be cautious because there's so much bullshit. But yeah, I totally agree, man. There's definitely some blatant cases, and you know Big Mike Obama, I mean, maybe that's a woman. My spidey senses are saying, no, it's not.
right. I mean, when you see these various clips of her dancing, and there's something swinging there between her legs when she's dancing with Ellen, the Goyim, the Shabbos Goyim. And if it was just one time, but there's like, I have personally seen at least that, you know, a dozen times where she wasn't so careful and didn't strap that that war club down, and you know, you see it swinging around in her various skirts and baggy pants and everything.
So. Yeah, man, Big Mike. I saw that footage too, Ellen DeGeneres show, and yeah, it was swinging, baby. So you know, there's also footage of, you know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand. Jacinda something or rather, I forget her name.
Yeah, right.
Its name. But you know, there's a footage of her walking down the hall swinging around, and someone put you know, the Bee Gees in the background, New York City shaking everybody, New York City breaking, everybody shaking, staying alive, playing in the background. You know, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean that level of evil with that subhuman psychopath. I mean, Jim Fetzer believes she's a hermaphrodite, so she has both. So that, I mean, that could be. I mean, there are hermaphrodites. So,
well, yeah, you never know. Sure,
you never know.
But
yeah.
Something ain't right with that creature. And you know, it does fit in that she's actually a guy in a way, because you know the satanic cult, they love to invert everything and deceive everything, and this woman is unhinged, and I believe, you know, she looks evil, satanic, just like the Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan.
Oh yeah,
these people are dark, and you know, there's no question that at the top of the food chain, these people are truly serving Lucifer, Baal, Satan, whatever you want to call it, the dark energy, the destructive force. They truly are serving that, and you know, it's bizarre. Because you go into the whole pedophile thing, and the Epstein thing, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Believe me, it's much broader than 14 and 15 year old girls. I mean, give me a break. That's not even, I mean, that's dipping into some awfully young, you know, women. But you know, you're past puberty. The real pedophiles are into prepubescent children and little boys, you know, and that's what's not being told. I guarantee you that was going on in Epstein Island big time.
Oh, and even how they've got the Talmudic subhuman lesbian Jew judge who appointed by Obama, and she is there to gatekeep and won't allow the public to see the evidence because it's too inflammatory. That's the kind of gasoline we need poured on the fire. So all of these mass murdering criminals and these Satanists who have tortured these children and then harvested the adrenochrome and then had these dark ceremonies where they do literal human sacrifice, they all need to receive justice in the form of hanging or drawn and quartered or drawn behind a car. I mean, that trial should be broadcast live worldwide to expose what's really going on. But you got the traitor's Jew in there. And now, I don't know if you caught her twin, another rodent-looking little weasel lesbian Jew, which tragically married to another Jew lesbian, and they're raising two boys. If ever there were two males that are never going to fucking, pardon my French, are ever going to know what real life's about. Instead, they're just being indoctrinated by these subhuman Jews, and it's weird, man. It's everywhere. Like, I don't know if you've caught that really hilarious meme, because two vulgar, vile Jews, Seth Rogen and Sarah Silverman, are put out this just sickening Netflix film about Santa Inc. or something, and just ripping and you know, more Jew psychopathic propaganda, and it's really in bad taste. I mean, I refuse to even watch. But our brother Blackbird 9 was discussing it on my show last night on the Perfect Triangle, and it's really hilarious because they put this up on YouTube, the trailer, and they've got like over 100,000. I think I might have an image to show. Over 100,000 people commenting, and let's see, there it is right there. Let
me open. But negative comments?
Oh, totally negative. And but being incredibly, incredibly clever. Like, here we go. I'm about to blow this up and open it. Okay. All right. So you should be able to see this now. And so, not a fed goy replying to Seth Rogen. Did you know elves have been knocked off at least 109 shelves? Somehow they always end up climbing back on and making rules about knocking them off. And they always display the same voracious elfnocentrism that got them knocked off the shelf in the first place. That is really clever and really funny. And I've seen some other ones. I know I have it somewhere, but I use different devices like an iPhone, iPad, and you know, I have saved so many of these things. But there's another one who did a list of 109, and it's great. But and then that vile Jew Rogan goes, this is vaguely coded anti-Semitism that has been flooding my timeline. Happy holidays. So that's all the Jew can say is anti-Semitism. Oh, I'm such a victim. No, yeah. We're pointing out you're a Talmudic malignancy that should have no business being in any of these countries. And yet, like the cancer you are, you're everywhere. I mean, there should be real clever entertainers and writers and actors, not these Jews who are propped up by Jews who own the studios. It's just, yuck.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a corrosive influence on civilization. And, you know, in some ways, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, that, you know, the international Jew, the happy merchant, and the whole caricature of the Jew really represents the lowest, greediest part of humanity. And, you know, all parts of humanity and of people can be that way, but right. It's just like the international Jew has mastered it. It's the model, the perfection of the ideal of the malignant, corrosive element in society. And, you know, well, I remember that Sarah Silverman creature, you know, had this other bit a few years back where, yeah, we killed your Jesus. We do it again. Yeah. You know, and it's like, okay, you know, I personally find that offensive. It's not funny. I certainly wouldn't call for her to be censored, but it's like, yeah. Why, you know, this kind of that's supposed to pass as humor. It's not. It's this vicious, you know, attacks, but whatever, you know, she's free to say it, but why should we put these kind of people up on a pedestal is my question.
Well, that's a great point. And they claim they're in the comedic lineage of Lenny Bruce, who was a Jewish guy, but I mean, he was really fighting censorship and he was kind of funny and he was really mild compared to, and then they all think they're the grandchildren of George Carlin. George Carlin took it all on with brilliance and humor and irony and satire, and they are just vulgar, pathetic, you know, not funny assholes, literally disrespectful, yeah. Narcissistic clowns, and they think, oh, we're so hip and cool because we can do that. And I find Sarah Silverman to be unwatchable, like just about any other Jew comedian. They think just they're dreadful. So funny. Yeah. Just
dreadful. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, man. And, you know, George Carlin, what's so interesting about him is, you know, his humor was always observation based. He would observe things and point out things that once you notice them, they're really obvious. And then that's what makes it funny, because you didn't notice it. And then he tells you, hey, what about this? And then you laugh at yourself in a way, because he gave you a piece of information that you weren't able to see before about life. You know, that's what great humor is. And it's just interesting too, toward the end of his career, you know, the last few years of his life, his whole act was just dropping truth bombs, you know?
I mean, oh yeah. Amazing.
It was pretty wild, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. It's so tragic, Scorpio, that we now have these traitors to this nation, to their family, to their own heritage, to their traditions, but they're the cool little urban metrosexual virtue signaling, face diaper wearing, glad to take the death jab experiment, and they think they are so savvy, and they even have the arrogance and the narcissism to call themselves woke, the woke culture. They are the most mind controlled, weak-minded dolts you could possibly find, but they're all like, oh, Pope Fauci, we have to obey Pope Fauci, and he's America's doctor. And Judy Mikovits, and our heart goes out to Judy Mikovits, that her beloved husband, David, passed away 2 days ago. And Judy, we love you. And, we hope your grieving and healing goes well, and we're all here for you, and you are a true hero, and your husband was a great guy. I met him in person a couple times, and and she always described him as her rock, and he is that guy. If you talk with him, he's really incredibly bright, but not volatile. You know, she gets real animated and real quick, and he's a very steadying influence and sees it all. So they were a great couple, and it's sad.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting how they roll out Fauci on every channel, and it's sort of like this branding. He's like the brand that we're all supposed to trust. It's just interesting how they bring out one person so that you sort of focus on this face and what he says. And it's a branding, you know, I just find it fascinating that they use this guy. And even though Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has written this book that just tears the man's entire career to shreds and shows what a criminal he really is. And, you know, and really this man needs to be, you know, executed probably for his crimes, to be honest. Oh, he's probably responsible for the deaths of millions of people.
Literally. No question. Literally. It's not a stretch. It's not like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's 1 degree of mass murdering little 5'3" Fauci the rat, as Jim Fetzer calls him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's just interesting how I think it's the best-selling book on Amazon right now. Not a word about it. He did make it on the Tucker Show, apparently, but I guess the book has, a couple thousand footnotes in it or something like that?
There it is, the real Anthony Fauci. It is an eye-opener. I mean, Kennedy is surrounded by exceptional researchers and legal team, so they would not put out one line because they would be coming after him with the billions of dollars at their disposal in legal fees. And the fact that there's not a peep of anybody saying, oh, Kennedy, he lied, you know, so everything in that book is true. Just like everything in that book, the Judy's books, especially the last one, is also true, exposing Fauci as the complete murderous lowlife that he is. Because if anybody had the means and the money and the legal wherewithal to go after Judy or RFK Jr., if there was one sentence that wasn't true, you can believe they would do so.
Well, I think you made a great point there too about the book that you know, he used legal teams and researchers, and you know, yeah, someone in his position to write one single line wrong about him, to make one wrong accusation, would definitely be, you know, a massive lawsuit. And instead, we're hearing not one word about the book at all. It's like it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Instead, they put out a laughable National Geographic special about how great Fauci is. And, and it's just such a laugh.
Yeah. Man. Ain't that special? Gosh. Gee, I wonder how they did that. God. And you know, earlier you mentioned, you know, some of the comments in videos and articles. You know, I always take, not always, but I often will take the time to read the comment section in articles I read and videos I watch. And you know, that's one thing that does give me hope, man. There's some amazing commentary by people on all different platforms, people that seem to really have some inkling as to what's going on. You know, I used to monitor Bill Gates' YouTube channel because the comment section was just so outrageous. I mean, it was just like thousands of comments of, you know, negative things and pointing out things about Bill Gates that are just wrong. And they had to turn the comments off because it got so bad. So, you know, there is a lot of people, like I was saying in the introduction, every day it seems like more people, one more person starts to have some realizations and starts to do some research and join our side. Very few people can go back. Once you learn something, it's hard to unlearn it.
Oh man, exactly right. Yeah, I have family members who still think, and dear friends, you know, lifetime friends who still think that the US military was so honorable and won World War II for freedom. And I'm like, yeah. I try to tell them, look, it's all fiction. They were like we always say in The Godfather, everything you need to know in life, you can learn from watching The Godfather 1 and 2. And the U.S. was essentially Luca Brasi for the internationalist Jew Godfather, and that there was no honor. We should have been aligned with Germany. We should have Hitler wanted peace once he had established the natural German boundaries that they felt were historically accurate. He was not interested in going any farther. He also wanted to have the German economic model become a model to say it correctly, for every other first world country. And had he done so, the world would be such a better place. I mean, we would really be living in a golden age, and it's just tragic that the exact opposite happened.
Well, that's true. Very good points. And another way to look at it too is could that we be facing a worse situation now than if Germany had won World War II? I just don't think so. Here we are facing this international effort to force vaccinate people. That's where they're trying to take this. Like, hey, if you want to participate in society, you have to be vaccinated. That's where this is all going. And of course, this is the Great Reset cooked up by these people. So, yeah, you're right. It couldn't have been any worse, that's for sure.
Right.
And that's a fascinating topic. We should really go into World
We
War
should,
II,
absolutely.
and I'd really like, Mike knows a lot about that too, and I'd love to go into that because it's really, in so many ways, the reality we live in. We're just living on the vapor trails of World War II. World War II set the stage for everything that we're in right now, especially the military industrial complex and these massive military armies and the intelligence complex.
Right.
That's set the stage for all that. It set the stage for Israel, on and on and on. I mean, just pretty much it set the stage for the modern world.
Oh, well stated. Yeah. In fact, two of the books that outline how far back this satanic death cult goes is the brilliant Matt Boyle book by Justus Martyr, The Curse of Canaan, and equally, I just felt.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And in this hour, it is our great honor and pleasure to welcome Mr. Andy Carrington Hitchcock onto the show, a man who has made a tremendous impact on this whole line of thinking and the alternative media. His book, The Synagogue of Satan, has been a tremendous, huge impact on so many people. So, without further ado, I'd like to bring on Andy. Andy, how are you, sir?
Hi, Scorpio. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for inviting me on today.
Well, I would just like to start off, Andy, by saying, your book, The Synagogue of Satan, I believe it first came out in 2006. Is that correct?
Yeah, I self-published. I printed 500 copies, and then, I had a one-page website with a PayPal button on it. And I was on Daryl Bradford Smith's show and doing shows about it. And now I think I sold about half of them. And I sent them, only three, four, five, something like that, promotional copies out, one to Tex Mars. And he wanted to buy a few and sell them to Power of Prophecy. And
Oh,
I
wow.
even I couldn't do it. It would have to be below cost, So I said to him, I said, well, have you thought of publishing it? And I saw you had Edward Hendry on the event this week. And I believe, apart from Wanda Mars, Tex's wife, that I was the first person outside of Tex to be published by Power of Prophecy or his the imprint's called Rivercrest Publishing. And then after the Synagogue of Satan, I think Edward Hendry was probably one of the next up, where he started publishing authors other than himself or his wife. At his publishing imprint, part of Power of Prophecy. And then it was strange, really, because his version of the book, any sort of mistakes I'd made, he corrected, and there was an index added to it that I didn't have. So I was left with these sort of 250 books because people were buying them from him because it was a better edition that you could buy then off Amazon and all these different things. So it took me a good year or two to shift my remaining copies, but it really flew with him. It ran to about 9 or 10 printings in the end.
Wow, that's amazing. And I first came across your book in 2008. When I think when you were doing shows with Daryl Bradford Smith. And Andy, I just I know, sitting from your point of view, it's hard to realize, but that book just had a tremendous influence on so many people. It was just an epic work, and I just want to thank you for writing that book. It influenced me personally, and it was a tremendous, tremendous thing. So, what was it like getting to know Tex Mars? Because Tex Mars is another man that really had an influence on me. I remember back in the '90s, getting cassette tapes of his shows and his talks, and listening to him on a cassette player. So that kind of dates things.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I in all the setup for the book, I never really spoke to him. We communicated by email, and it was all new to me, being sent a contract to sign and things like that. And then he invited me on the show to do a show, because of course, he'd do a show on his own book to give it a push. But the other thing that he did as well was he went out on the air himself to promote the book on other shows. Wow. Because, he was known, I wasn't known. So I've got in my folder here, Texmar Synagogue of Satan interviews. If I sort them, these all took place, it looks like, in 2007. So if I can just open this up a bit and see what the dates are for you, and then I can tell you who was actually on. Oh, no, they're all there. That's fine. Yeah, 2007, March, April, and May. And he was on with Pastor Butch Paul, Charles Giuliani of The Truth Hurts, Daniel Ott of The Edge, Dr. Bill Deagle of The Mutual Medical Report, James Lowe of the Jiggy Jaguar Show. That sounds like fun. Then he was on with Mark Dankoff. And I never knew this. I looked at it recently and texts have passed. And I was already doing shows with Mark. So I played the how he did with him. He did it with, appeared promoting it on Michael Collins Piper's The Piper Report, Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, and Rob Revere, The Rob Revere Show. So he literally went out promoting the book on those, shows. And I presume he went on in the past to promote his own book, hence the relationship was already there. I know that Mark Dankoff had tried to get hold of me, but at that point, when Mark was on the air, I was actually at work during the day. I was still working full time in an office at that point back in 2007. Oh, wow. And I think he did the breakfast show on RBN. So that would have been when I was at work from 2 till 5. Yeah, something like that. So, that's just a bit of history there. And then it was strange because only a few years ago, it was probably less than a year before he passed, I had to phone up the Power of Prophecy office, and the phone was ringing, and then this guy answered it, and it was Tex Mars. I thought, and it turned out what had happened was if the phones were busy at the office, that it would default over to him at his home, because by then he'd taken a, he'd sort of gone into semi-retirement. He'd actually handed over the whole Power of Prophecy company to his staff, which is not something you hear of a lot. Gave them the whole company and the books and what have you. And then he was just doing his Bible home church. He stepped back from his weekly show you were referring to when you would get the cassette tape, Power of Prophecy. Yes. That was handed over to Jerry Barrett, who, again, these people and Sandra and Michelle, they all worked at the office, and they all had, Jerry Barrett was, I forget what his role was in the office, but Michelle did the publishing and different people did different things. And, and then they'd also do things like Jerry was the audio engineer for his show. So he ended up taking over the show. And I think that still goes today from what I last saw. But I spoke to him and we had a chat for about 15 minutes, catching up about different things. And that was just about a year before he died. That would have been the last time I spoke to him.
Oh, wow. Well, I want to hand things over to Giuseppe, but first, let me ask you, what was the genesis of you writing this book? What was the process by which you decided to sit down and write a book? And how did you decide on the title for the book? I mean, the title just says it all. So give us a little background, if you could, on how this came into fruition, into reality.
Well, what it was, Scorpio, is I was listening to shows getting into this from the early 2000s, and I was always really big music fan, like I know both you and Giuseppe are. And so in my spare time, I'd be grabbing my CD player and getting a bunch of CDs together and playing tracks from this and tracks from that. And gradually I started downloading shows, independent media stuff, starting off with things like Alex Jones and David Icke, and I found this here and downloading it getting an MP3 CD player and getting one put in the car and stuff like that. So stopping listening to music and starting listening to shows. And then I was interested, certain things jumped out at me, and I was going to do my own little website. And it's funny because I've followed a lot of the Planet X thing for a while, because I've always been someone who thinks that something major is going to happen that's going to change everything, and it could actually get rid of us all. But I jumped on that bandwagon. I had a website already called Y2012, and I built it on, I think, Microsoft Publisher, which is apparently something you shouldn't build websites on. And I thought I could just press a button one day and it would automatically appear on the internet. I knew nothing about hosting or anything like that. So that was why I had to, you know, redo things. But my plan was to, I got all the Bilderberg lists off Bilderberg.org. And I was also going to look into the Club of Rome and the Royal Institute for International Affairs, the CFR, and the Rothschild family. And for some reason, I'd already got the Bilderberg group lists, and there's not a lot to do with them. You've got the lists. And so I thought, well, I've got them ready, and I decided to look at the Rothschild family, and it just kept popping up all over the place, and I started to see connections and how they were linked to other people and stuff like that. So I was listening to more and more shows, as you find where more and more shows are, and then finding other material all over the internet that you could find, and making my own notes. So I'd look at a particular historical event and, you know, listen to all different takes on that, know what the mainstream one was, and then see what seemed to fit based upon the evidence that I'd uncovered. And the only way to kind of keep track of them all was to put them in a timeline, because I didn't know how to index things or anything like that, but I could remember, you know, years where to find stuff. So that's what I started doing, and it became the history of the House of Rothschild on Darrell Bradford Smith's website. And it just, whenever I'd do more research, I'd update it, and I'd send him and Eric Huffschmidt, who managed his website then, my, you know, up-to-date version. And it just got bigger and bigger until it became the Synagogue of Satan. So it became a book really by accident. And that was how it all came about.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
Well, Andy, I just November 29th, I just ordered the updated with the autograph, because I wanted to have your autograph, because it's such a seminal work, magisterial. And then I also ordered In the Name of Yahweh. So tell us about your other book, a little less known.
Well, thank you, Giuseppe. Yeah, In the Name of Yahweh, this is not for everybody. I remember seeing reviews and people saying it's hard to believe that this is by the same person who wrote The Synagogue of Satan, because it's a book about the Bible, and it takes the take on the Bible, which I can understand, again, why people are quick to dismiss that the Israelites are actually the white race of the Bible. And why people, I think, are more inclined to dismiss that is that they got up to some pretty evil things back in their time. But it's difficult to summarize, but the basic premise is that, as you know, most people will know, the Bible tells the story of how God created man. That man was Adam, and then created Eve out of Adam, and then they had children, Cain and Abel, and then Cain killed Abel. Well, the additional information here, and I explain it in the book, is Adam and Eve were not the first men and women on the planet. And you will find, if you look in the Bible, that they don't pop up until chapter 2. But chapter 1, it talks about men and women being created and what have you. But I believe in, you have to look at things like a concordance with a dictionary, where it takes the original name of Adam and it gives you definitions like of ruddy face and what have you. So that would indicate that Adam was white. And then you look at what happened between Cain and Abel, and you look at the conception of Cain and how Eve was seduced by the serpent. And then you find later in the Bible that the serpent was Satan, all sorts of different things. So it becomes apparent that, you know, when she ate from the tree of, good and evil, all this sort of stuff they talk about that you have to look up, this was actually her being sexually seduced, becoming pregnant with Cain, and her then seducing Adam and becoming pregnant with Abel. which appeared to be a dual pregnancy by two different men. The children were born. They had different fathers. One was Satan and one was Adam, who, of course, was created by God. And then Satan's son, Cain, slew Abel. And then he went, was banished from the Garden of Eden and went eastward, where he went on to build cities and have children. So, you know, if it was only them, they were the first men and women, Adam and Eve, and then Cain and Abel. Well, who did he go and have children and build cities with if there weren't people already on the planet at that time? And then Adam and Eve had another child called Seth, which meant replacement, as in replacement for Abel. And I believe that ever since then, you've had this war between the children of Satan and the children of God that has essentially was delayed, if you like. I think that we would have been out of here long ago if it wasn't for Jesus Christ. And it's going on to the present day. And that's why you've seen where we didn't live in the greatest of conditions, and we never have historically lived in the greatest of conditions. You know, when you talk about the white man and woman on the street, who are mainly the laborers and the peasants and what have you, not the chosen few that end up as the lords and the dukes and all that sort of thing. But what we did have is we had a Christian faith. And I find it interesting that they've taken that away first in, you know, going back 50 years or so ago, when you had all this push of the separation of church and state and what have you. Yet you don't have a separation of church and state when it comes to other faith-based schools that aren't Christian. It's only ever when it becomes a Christian religion that it's a problem. And so my feeling is that they started off by, you know, removing Christianity because that gave us a certain amount of protection against the children of Satan. And then as that time has progressed and that protection gradually was whittled away from us, then we are in a situation where there is no God for people to turn to because they don't know who it is, because they've been divorced from that God generally a couple of generations before. So there's very few people. I think that's why we're seeing a bit of a resurgence, if you like, in Christianity in recent years, because people have looked at all these things going on in the world and they've started to think, well, actually, all the stuff that, you know, certainly I bought into the sex, drugs and rock and roll thing as a sort of teenager and in my 20s and stuff like that. That kind of lifestyle probably wasn't the, you know, rebellious, good lifestyle that you were told it was. Actually, you were probably harming yourself by doing that. And I think more people are seeing that today. And then we see what's going on in the world with the lockdowns and, you know, want to forcibly make people to put something in their bodies that we know has killed tens of thousands, if not millions of people around the world, and certainly injured billions of people, because it's up to nearly 400,000 in the UK alone, with no response from the mainstream media. And what I try to use, and I'll try and bring a couple of these up today, is I have regular things that I go to in my shows that are kind of part of my toolkit, really. And one of them that you'll be familiar with is the Joel Stein article, Who Runs Hollywood? Come On. And the reason that I mention this over and over again is that when you look at that last paragraph, and it's on the right-hand bar of my website, there's the headline, you just click on it. And this was published on December 19th of 2008 in the Los Angeles Times. This wasn't on some wacky conspiracy site. This was the Los Angeles Times, a mainstream American newspaper. And this would be about 13 years ago now, because we're December of 2021. And the last line or paragraph is, I don't care if Americans think we're running the news media, Hollywood, Wall Street or the government. I just care that we get to keep running them. And my question to people back then is, do you think these people have got more power today than they had in 2008? Well, I can give you an answer myself. Back in 2008, I mentioned earlier, I set up a website in 2006 with a PayPal button where people could buy my book. They could still do that in 2008. They can't do it now because I've been denied PayPal. They could still get my book off Amazon in 2008, but they can't do now. All these different things that I've personally experienced, and that's why I always bring this up. Do you think what Joel Stein was bragging about, that he doesn't care if Americans think we're running the news media, Hollywood, Wall Street or the government. I just care that we get to keep running them. Has their power greater, got greater or lesser in the last 13 years? And I think we all know the answer to that. And you look at one of the things that he says, we run the news media. Well, in the UK recently, only on Tuesday of this week, so 5 days ago as you go to air, we've all been told that we've got to wear masks in shops again. And I was reading a Daily Mail article, and the Daily Mail articles go on forever and ever and ever. And it was one story after another, £200 fine, and it could go up to £6,400, and you must do this. And then hidden at the very bottom was, oh, unless you have an exemption. So they'd hidden that away somewhere, because the news media, who Joel Stein says these people control, want you all to wear masks. So that says to me that's to our detriment. Never mind that I know of people who've worn masks and have got it. They just get uncomfortable. They can't see. Their glasses steam up. The whole thing, we don't. You know more, I know that, Giuseppe, you've got a medical knowledge of this. But it's interesting how it's being pushed by this very same group. And then we're also having to force something into our bodies. And the other thing that I say on that note is that why does my body, my choice only apply to women who want to murder their baby? You know, I thought it was about bodily autonomy, but clearly it isn't, because it's always, oh, but. And then they say, well, you know, you can't go into a shop if you don't wear a mask. Well, what if a shop can refuse to admit you if you don't wear a mask or if you don't get a vaccine, because they've got personal choice. Here's the other thing that I go to. Okay. Can that same shop refuse to bake you a cake if you're a homosexual couple? Oh, no, they can't do that. Oh, so they can discriminate me in one way, but not another. Oh, no, that's different. They've always got a caveat for what suits them, because theirs is the agenda. And it's not about choice, personal choice, anything about that. What it's about is they've got an agenda that they're going to force upon you. And you have to comply with every aspect of that agenda. And if any of it appears hypocritical or inconsistent, they'll always have a but sort of argument. And we know the people always come out with that sort of terminology. And so it's completely transparent. So many people have seen through it, and they're going pedal to the metal to try and get this through. And the more I'm looking at the moment, the more I think this is all to do with a future banking system. The passports are going to be what they're going to apply onto us before they hook the banking system up to that. And as soon as that happens, you can forget about your freedoms, because they will decide what you can buy, when you can buy, and it won't matter if you've got $10 in your bank account or $10 million in bank account, because they'll control the flow. So I think I've gone in a few directions there. Sorry about that, but I hope that information was useful. Back to you.
Absolutely. I'd like to have
go ahead, Sadie.
I just wanted to have a follow-up question regarding your book, and I'm really looking forward to reading In the Name of Yahweh. And if you combine your amazing research in the synagogue of Satan with your biblical knowledge, and then the third element to factor in is the idea that the children of Satan, the Rothschilds, paid Cyrus Schofield to rewrite the Bible and put a new spin on the children of Satan as the chosen. If you take that all into account, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And why is it that most white Europeans, be they in the United States, England, anywhere, first world nation, why can't they see what's being done to them?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it, Giuseppe? I mean, it's frustrating, because when I bought The Synagogue of Satan out, I really thought I'd hit something here, because there were books that talked about this sort of subjects, but they just misapportioned the responsibility elsewhere. So they talk about things like the New World Order and the Illuminati and all this, but they wouldn't tell you who these people were. And it was very easy to find that information out. And it's not so easy to find that information out now. I was recently for a show coming up shortly. I was looking up Sabbatai Zevi. You're familiar with, as you say, Daryl Bradford Smith used to have Muhammad Rafiq on there talking about the Sabbateans and how, you know, Sabbatai Zevi called himself the Jewish Messiah back in 1666.
Right.
And his Sabbatean movement was instructed to do as much sin and evil, because that would get more pleasure, give their God more pleasure. Well, what God would be be happier with sin and evil. It wouldn't be the God that we're familiar with. It would be Satan, wouldn't it? And all this sort of, it's just a case of joining the dots together. But trying to find information on Sabotage Evie, I was using Quant, I was using Web Crawler as my search engines. And in the end, I thought, I'll even have a stab at Google, see if that comes up. It's all gone. There's hardly anything out there.
Amazing.
And you think to yourself, I picked up my book and I've got probably less than half a page on this. And there's more in that than I could find in getting on for 3/4 of an hour of research on 3 different search engines, keep using different terms. And that's where we are now. So it's very sad that people didn't pick up on it back then, when I really thought that, this could have changed things. But yeah, back then, it took them several years to get it taken off of Amazon. They had their first attempt back in 2013. And then it was around the time I lost the PayPal, I think 2017, 2018. So it was still over 10 years before they got to take it down. And I know that they would have liked to have done it long before then. So it's sad that the window of time was missed then, because then we could have maybe prevented what's going on in the world now. It's not what they say it is. It's so obvious because, a vaccine was always there to inoculate you against the disease. Yet apparently these vaccines, you can still not only catch the same disease they're supposed to inoculate you against, but you can pass it on to other people. So they're not what they say they are. There's something obviously completely detrimental to us, hence the amount of people that have died and been injured by them so far. And also, they're so hell-bent on getting them into us, which tells me more that it's something to do with what they've got planned for the future, which is some sort of cryptocurrency. And then you see the cryptocurrency data thing from Bill Gates with the 060606 patent number, and then Snopes talks about it, and they say, well, 060606 is obviously not the same as 666. And you look at all these laughable explanations that they've got for things, and it's clearly something satanic. I think it's linked to cryptocurrency. I think, well, that's where they want to go with it. But I think it can also do certain things to certain people that they don't like, who they've already attacked. And that's why the likes of us and the audience have to be extra vigilant at this time, because they are trying to take out, as many of the opposition as they can. And I think when you look at the nursing home situation and certain countries, I think Greece is the latest one to mandate the vaccine, but only for over 60s. Well, they want that generation gone, that generation that understood freedom, that understood being raised with a moral set of moral values, that were raised with a Christian belief things. They want them out of here. So they haven't got someone that's going to say to these kids that they've brainwashed what world used to really be like. Back to you.
Wow, that's you've hit on so many great points, Andy. It's impossible to decouple Western civilization from Christianity. I mean, that's just a simple fact. It's Christianity, the basic tenets of Christianity, that created Western civilization as we know it. And to try and deny that is to be intellectually dishonest, in my view. And what do you think the end game here is with these vaccines, so-called vaccines? You hit upon some possibilities, but why are they so hell-bent on getting this into everybody in the world? And I guess the other thing I would add to this is, what's interesting so far, the way it's playing out, it's Europe and the, North America, Canada and America that have got the highest vaccine rate. In Africa, they're saying the vaccine rate is somewhere around 5%. And so it seems to me that there is a plan to sort of rejuggle and repopulate, say, the world with a different type of person as well. So what do you think the end game here is, Andy?
Well, Jeff Wendt said recently, and this is something I've been thinking about recently, I think a lot of us are going to start to experience synchronicity. They're definitely going for white countries first. Absolutely, definitely. You look at Australia, all the barbaric activity of the so-called police on the citizens there who don't want the vaccine, who don't want the lockdowns, and they're just firing rubber bullets at their own people, spraying them with tear gas and all these draconian things that they're doing. And then you hear about Austria, that they're going to mandate the vaccine for everybody. And I find it interesting that a certain painter came from Austria, didn't he? Someone that they really detest as well. So yeah, no doubt these vengeful people are probably going to want to punish the entire population of Austria for that guy who was born over 100 years ago. It's all their fault. And then they're talking about the coming out of Germany. We've got a new chancellor coming out to replace Merkel over there, and don't think that they'll ever let you have anyone better. It always gets progressively worse. And he's a big proponent of the vaccine and wants to make it mandatory there. And again, Germany's another country. You look at the way that they treated them after World War II with the Rhine-Meadows concentration camps that you never hear about, but the likes of books. Oh, I had his name there, but a Canadian guy that I spoke to who wrote books about the camps at the end of Other Losses, James Bach, it's actually James Back, Bacque. He passed away in his early 90s, not so long ago, and he wrote about these Rhine Meadows concentration camps and how millions of, you know, Germans were put in those after the war. And they were just, you know, dig your own toilet, barbed wire camps. You were out in the elements, very similar to the FEMA camps that you see in America today. They didn't have all these dormitories and swimming pools and theaters and post offices in like other so-called camps we could mention. So these ones, you're out in the elements, and you can see the similarities. And I personally think that what they're going to do, and again, I just learned something just from what Scorpio said when he was talking about the 5% vaccine take-up rate in Africa. Well, if they're going for all these white countries at once, now, if they took out a complete cross-section of the people, so they killed, 80, 90% of the people in those countries, and they were split evenly amongst all the different groups in those countries. Well, where are you going to go to get more white people? If they do it to all of Europe and then your white countries like America, Australia, Canada, where are they going to go? Well, there's nowhere left for them to go because all those countries are targeted. But what they will be able to do is they'll certainly be able to fill the 90% people that they kill off with people from Africa or people from China or India or Pakistan, or they can go over to South America and get people from Honduras, from Mexico, Brazil, all these different places they can get people from to replace the people who die in Western countries. But they can't get white people from anywhere, unless, of course, they maybe go to Russia or Belarus or somewhere like that. And, of course, we hear all the saber rattling against them as well. And then there are some people, I deal with this all the time. Someone will say Putin is the best thing since sliced bread, and other people will say, well, he's in it with all the others. And I really don't know. I like to have hope that maybe he is, someone there that's still standing up for his people, but you just don't know. So I'm inclined to think what could be happening is you could be looking at a big kill off of the people that they don't want first, and then once they've got rid of the bulk of them, if not all of them, then they will look to impose their cryptocurrency system on the people that they deem easier to control, that aren't as uppity for them as the white race. That's what I think is probably happening, but it's based upon what I've read, what I've experienced, and, it's based upon the principle of Occam's razor. And I see that these nations are being targeted over and above any others. And I see that these people in the same media that Joel Stein said that they control are constantly being attacked as having white privileged and being told how evil white people are, which, of course, creates attacks like we saw recently at that Christmas market in America, where a black guy tries to run over all these people at a Christmas market. And suddenly it's, they don't want to talk about it in the media because it's job done for them. Oh, great. We got what we wanted. We managed to inflame someone to kill a load of white people. And that's where they're going with this sort of stuff. So they'll report what they want, but this is weaponization without a doubt. They essentially promote all these edicts to bring people into white countries. And then when they're ready, they weaponize these people against the white people and say, you've got to turn on the white people because they're really evil, didn't you? Know, they put you in slavery. You'd have had Wakanda if it wasn't for the evil white man. And these people, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. We'll go and kill the whitey then. And then they're doing their job for them. So they're laughing all their way to the bank. It really is quite shocking what we're enduring. But then, you know, in life, you rely on your governments to act in your interests. Well, they're not. They're acting in these people's interests. You rely on the police to protect you, but all they want to do is come and arrest people for things that they say that offend these people. You rely on your media to tell you what's going on in the world, but all they do is tell you what they want to tell you that's going to go against you, but it's going to protect these people. And so when you've got all that against you, you can't fight in this system because it's all rigged against you. So that's why I feel now that whilst our job is still to explain to people, because if we weren't explaining it and getting this information out, there wouldn't be all the censorship. I think that our job is to get the word out, but beware of any idiots out there, you know, these sort of Rambo characters who say, oh, they're going to do this to, and they're going to defend themselves this way. And you know, you hear about people being arrested for something that they said or they posted on the internet. Yet these people are talking about how, you know, they're going to do this to that person and this to this person. They never get arrested. Well, these are the feds out there, folks, that you've got to watch out for, especially in the independent media, because it's peppered with a lot of them who hope that they'll post something in the chat room, get someone to go along with it, and then come after them to frighten the rest of us. That's where we're going. They can't fight in a system that's fair. They can only fight in a system that they rig. That's why they've never come out and said, given examples of my book that they don't like. They just take it down because they can't debate it. Because they can't, they'd have to lie to debate it. And that's where they are, and that's where we are. Back to you.
Yeah, that's a lot of great points there. And it is always a one-way street. If it serves the agenda, it just sort of is given a pass. If it doesn't, oh, we've got to come down like a ton of bricks. Giuseppe, go ahead, sir.
Andy, Wakanda forever. That was an awesome reference of the Marvel movie with the Black Panther. It's... you know, Andy, to speak to your point that they can't compete in a fair fight. I mean, right now, the whole idea of instead of discussing intelligently as adults, everything immediately becomes an ad hominem insult. You're an anti-Semite. You're a homophobe. You're a racist. You're a white supremacist. And yet the data, as our frequent collaborator, the great Professor Jim Fetzer points to, is that almost, you know, 98% of all violent crimes in New York are done by American blacks and Mexicans, right? In the country as a whole, there's a shocking amount of black men ages 16 to 54 do a majority of all murders, rapes, violent assaults, weapons charges, and yet they're the victims. They need the reparations. It just makes no sense to me. But my question to you, Andy, is how is it that the so-called white race, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of success in the historically in the Western world, how is it that they are so easily entranced into being virtue signaling, face diaper wearing lemmings, going along with everything that the children of Satan are trying to rewrite in their bizarre transhuman rewriting of reality?
Yeah, I think it is shocking when you see how people go along with this agenda, and they have done for so long. But I remember a couple of guys who were a lot older than me about 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. And they worked at the same place I did in a different part of the building. And they were part of a few of us that would meet up in the pub for, a drink at lunchtime. I couldn't drink alcohol at lunchtime because I got to work in the afternoon. So I'd just have like a soft drink. But it was nice to have the company. I'd eat something at the desk and go down there. And they'd go and do a crossword in one of the you know, newspapers over in the UK, the Times, which is, you know, the equivalent of doing a crossword in one of your major newspapers over, you know, like the New York Times, for example. If you do the crossword in there, you'd have to be quite intelligent to finish it and even start it. And my brain doesn't work that way. And these two would get on with this crossword, and they have professional qualifications in insurance and stuff like that. They were coming up to their retirement. I would have been about 34, 35 at the time. And you talked to them about certain issues, and you could tell that they knew that the world wasn't as they'd been told it was. But because they'd spent their life playing the game under that system, it was just too painful for them to suddenly turn around and say, you know what? I've been thinking this all along, and actually it's the complete opposite that's been going on. But I can't handle that mentally, that I've been, you know, here I am, an intelligent guy. They put, you know, tell me I've got to learn this, and I've got to take exams at evening school after I finished, you know, college and university to get professional qualifications so I can get a good job in an organization. I do all of that, and I can do all this other stuff as well. But actually, I was wrong about even who actually controls my country, who really is in charge here. And they can't handle that because they think it's a completely misspent life. And a lot of people, they know what's going, that there's something not right, but they just won't, they're too fearful of their own ego accepting that maybe they made a mistake. I mean, I can tell you that at the age of 48, it was a completely different country where I grew up. I mean, I still live in the area where I grew up. But now I'm a minority in many of the areas where I grew up. But in back to that time, I was the vast majority. You didn't really see many people of other races. And so a decision was made at some point to change the racial makeup of where you live. So who made that decision? Well, it wasn't the people, because you could look back at the legal the laws that were passed, and there was no referendums or anything saying, oh, you know, we voted to change the racial makeup of the area in which we live. None of this happened. Yet none of this was asked of the people, rather. Yet it's happened all throughout the white world. And it's almost as if there's been a plan, a consistent plan, to change the racial makeup of that area. And the only reason of changing it would be to get rid of the people that were originally there, and that's the white race. And then you look at people like Barbara Lerner Spector saying how, you know, if Europe doesn't become multicultural, it won't survive. Well, I take that as a threat. I think that what she basically said is, if you will not accept this multicultural plan we've got for Europe, then Europe will not survive. So either take the immigrants or take the Samson option. You know, take your choice. You're getting one or the other, but you're going. It's as simple as that. It's like that line out the Irishman with, you know, when the Joe Pesci character and Robert De Niro character, they're reasoning over, you know, Jimmy Hoffa, because he's Robert De Niro, Frank Sheeran's friend. And the Joe Pesci's acting on behalf of the mafia, and he's worrying them, the Jimmy Hoffa played by Al Pacino. And Pesci just says to De Niro, he's going, or he's effing going. That's it. It's done. It's been decided. And I think that a decision was made about us long ago that we were going, and it was just about how they were going to get rid of us. Because when you see all these attacks on white people, when you see the likes of Noel Ignatieff, a Jewish professor, you know, if you or I had said anything, well, look at the Graham Hart situation. Graham Hart didn't say anything like Noel Ignatieff said. But Graham Hart's in prison in the UK, yet Noel Ignatieff is a professor at Harvard. He's since passed away. But he wasn't condemned for what he said. He wasn't charged with hate speech for what he said, that, you know, white people are cancer and they need to be destroyed, not deconstructed, but destroyed. We need to get them off our planet. You know, why? Oh, because he's Jewish and he can say that about white people, but white people can't say that about Jewish people. Well, again, you go back to the Joel Stein piece where he says we control media, the government, Wall Street and Hollywood. Well, if you control these things, then you've obviously got power over other people. And it just goes to show how that power is utilized. Back to you.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you really look at that Barbara Spector's, which is an interesting name, if you look at her eyes, this woman is truly evil. She just has these sort of black hole looking eyes with a soulless, heartless coldness to them. It's really amazing. And, you know, Andy, we have to ask ourselves, if these people are able to accomplish their goal, which is essentially to get rid of, you know, I believe, you know, people who inherently believe in freedom and the individual's right to claim his own destiny through his own actions, and replace those people with, you know, sort of just a more malleable, lower IQ, ill-behaved group of people, you have to ask yourself, if they're able to accomplish this goal without any kind of retribution or punishment, how are they going to treat the survivors after this great genocide is over? Just imagine, you know, how are they going to treat the survivors of this, Andy?
Well, I think the survivors, they'll be, there's no telling really, obviously, whether they take them out one by one. But the bigger picture for me with that is, as you touched on, these other people that they believe are easier to control. Well, look at the Chinese credit system. You know, most of these people just will go along with it completely because that's what they're used to. And, you know, if they have to do this to get food, to get accommodation, they'll do it. It's as simple as that, because they've been given a lifestyle. They've been indoctrinated in a lifestyle. We mustn't forget that China has been communist since the 1940s. And that's a long time. That's a few generations now. And so they're born into that. And whilst you're always going to get the odd dissident in any group, it's more the odd one amongst certain groups more than others. And that's why they'd be able to pick out a handful of people in an article on the Chinese credit score, like the guy who was a dissident to the government, so he wasn't allowed to buy train tickets, although he had the money, because his social credit score was so low. And so you might get, I think their feeling is that if they get people who may rebel against them, they'll just say, right, we're going to turn off you just did this, you just spray painted something over there, so you're going to have to clean it up now, or we're going to turn off your credit for X amount of time. And they're going to gradually get people like that, so that they will become conditioned like a Pavlov's dog, that if they don't do as instructed, they don't get their food. It's as simple as that. And I think that that's what they think that they can do, but they don't believe that they can do it with us, because whichever way you want to cut the pie, you go back historically, and all the art and the culture in the West was created by white people. And it's undeniable when you look at the inventions and I think that they've got to the stage where I think that they've got all the inventions that they need to go forward, and they can just maintain it with the people that they choose to have left on the planet. That's where I think that they're going with this. And it's a diabolical scheme, but if you look back at their literature historically and what they say about the Christians and things like that, we've been hated for thousands of years. And when you look at Jesus Christ, the way that I know, I had firsthand experience of this the other day, because I was out with my mother and she wanted to get Christmas cards with a sort of biblical theme on them and couldn't find them anywhere. And then in one shop, they found an old box at the back and bought them out for her. They didn't even know what to price them up at.
Wow.
Because, and then I was contacted by a guy in America. I'm not going to name him, but he's someone who's on my show. And he was going to send a card to a friend in the UK. And he wanted to send one with sort of religious theme. Couldn't find it anywhere. And this one, the biggest card shops in America, just all gone. So any reference to Christ, any reference to Christian, they're getting ready for a world without Christ. And if you look at the book of Luke, chapter 3, then it traces the lineage of Christ all the way back to Adam. So Christ was still of the tribe of Israel that I believe to be the white race. And that would also be another indicator of why they hate the white race so much, because Christ stemmed from them. People say, well, Christ was the Son of God. Oh, but he was born to Mary, wasn't he? You know, she gave birth to him. And so you would still have that physical line there that for some reason had to be a line that went straight back to Adam. And so it's these sort of things. And then you look at the book of John chapter 8 and see who Christ told us the children of Satan were. And then you look at the book of Revelation chapter 2, 9 and 3, 9, where it says that in the end times, you need to beware of those who say they are Jews but are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. And you see, I don't believe now that the people out there that are in the majority, I think the majority are like the Judeo-Christians. I think that the synagogue of Satan, the modern day synagogue of Satan, is the Judeo-Christians today. Because as you mentioned earlier, the Scofield Bible, they buy into all this garbage. They buy into the John Hagee garbage. And the idea, why is it not the Christian Judeos? Oh, because they've elevated Judeo before Christ. But they claim to worship Christ. But then they say, well, if we don't bless Israel, then God won't bless us. Well, Israel's not a landmass in the Bible. Israel was a people. And they say, well, the Jews were the Israelites, really? Well, if you look in the Bible, it says people wouldn't go here for fear of the Jews. They wouldn't go there for fear of the Jews. It repeats it throughout the Bible, for fear of the Jews, for fear of the Jews. It doesn't say for fear of the Israelites. So why would you suddenly have two different names there? So when I see all these things together, it goes back to the, and this is where we have to be constantly looking over our shoulders now, because they want to shut down everything that could expose them. But if you adopt the principle of Occam's razor and you look at exactly what's going on in the world today, if you got people out, you know, if you could bring people back to life, patriots of old, and they could look at the evidence today, you know, they would come to the same. You look at some of your founding fathers, and I know they weren't all good, but if the three of us put the evidence that we've got in front of them today, they would come up with the exact same conclusion, because on the principle of Occam's razor, it is the most likely solution to what is actually going on, the most likely outcome, but it's the other way around, if you like. It's the most likely scenario leading into the outcome that we're experiencing, and that's what I believe is going on today. And it's very shocking, but as I say, I caution people against anyone who encourages violence, because if they're going to come after people for posting something on the internet, yet there's someone out there keep calling for violence that nothing is done to, you'd have to say to yourself, well, why is nothing done to that person? But people who put something up on, you know, there was a guy who had a bit of banter in the UK. I didn't read the comments, but he was only a kid, really. I think in his late teens, early 20s. And he was a football fan, and he had a bit of toing and froing on the internet between some Tottenham Hotspur, which are a historically Jewish club in the UK. And he's doing 8 weeks in prison because of things he said on the internet. And it was just, as they always used to, I had a friend at work, and they called themselves, and this was brought up a few years ago, that the club were trying to stop them doing it, but they call themselves, they say that we're the Yid Army. That's what Tottenham Hotspur fans call themselves. And they were being urged by the club, don't use that anymore. Because, of course, the powers that should not be already knew that they were going to weaponize that term. And the last thing that they needed was a group of people, which are a vast group because they're part of a big Premier League football club, who would sing that about themselves on a Saturday at a football game. In the same way, but then that lessers the chance of prosecuting people who do say it, in the same way that you will have companies producing. They're not actually owned by Blacks, funny enough. They're not owned by another group that will produce rap music. And it will use the N-word all the time, but if one of us uses the N-word and it can be uncovered, then that could be cancel culture for good. But this company can put the material out, and Black people can say it to each other till the cows come home and nothing happens, because again, it's all about living in equality. You see, you're so equal that they're allowed to say certain things that you're not allowed to say. Well, someone explained to me if there's any words that white people can say that other people can't say, because there are words that other races can say that white people can be prosecuted for saying, but I'm not aware of any words that white people, that's the other way around, if you see what I mean. You know, it's astonishing to me how people don't wake up. And again, it takes us back to the racial situation. When I see generations ahead of me, you know, in their 60s, and they can look at me with a straight face and say nothing was done to our country, when they look at the way it is today compared to the way that they grew up, and never mind just the racial aspect, you look at the aspect of what lifestyles are promoted today, and how if you criticize this, even if you were to use scripture to criticize it, you can be prosecuted. And they just look at that and think, yeah, I was so tempted recently. There was a guy on Remembrance Day. He was an older guy, he had his medals on. And I wanted to ask him about that alleged David Irving quote, that if he'd have seen if the Allies had seen the state of the country today, would they have walked to the other side and fought with the Germans? But I didn't have the heart to say it to him, because he's another guy who thinks, oh, he's there, he's thinking of people he lost in the war and what have you, and not putting two and two together and thinking, actually, we fought the wrong people. Because you look at our world today, and would our world be like that if we'd have fought the other side? Well, General Patton had something to say about that to you, so they had to kill him.
Yep.
But I'm just seeing we're coming towards the end, so I'll hand back to both of you guys.
Yes, Andy, this has been a tremendous conversation, and we hope we can get you to come back on soon. Giuseppe, why don't you give us a final thought, and then we'll turn it over to Andy for his final thoughts.
Well, yesterday on my show, The Perfect Triangle, the great Frederick C. Blackburn, a.k.a. Blackbird 9, was on, and we did a focus on the Netflix Santa Inc. movie, which was just a vulgar, offensive effort from the talentless Jews, Seth Rogen and Sarah Silverman. And the interesting thing is they ran a commercial, or a trailer, I guess it's called, and left the comments on, got over 50 comments in a day.
Welcome back to the third and final hour of Operation Scorpio. And really, in the last hour, I thought we concluded a really tremendous interview with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, a man of great intellect and faith and wisdom. And, you know, there's a big difference between intelligence, cleverness, and wisdom. And, you know, one thing that really struck me about the conversation, and Giuseppe, I want to get your thoughts on this and your reflections on the interview, is that I think right now it's so important that we all really, you know, double down on our spiritual path and our path towards self-improvement. And, you know, many people think that, well, if you incorporate the teachings of Jesus Christ into your spiritual path, that somehow you can't possibly use any other knowledge or information or from another source. And I just, you know, that's not really true, but it's important to have that quiver in your set of tools, you know, because if you don't, you're missing out on one of the greatest messages spiritually that's ever been told. But it doesn't have to completely limit you to not seeking other sources of truth and wisdom, because of the time we live in, we're able to look things up. We can buy any book we want. We can really learn so many spiritual things very rapidly if we choose to. So that said, Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on what I said and your thoughts on the interview?
Well, excellent point, Scorpio. And that was a great interview. It was such an honor to have a legend such as Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, who we've gotten to be good friends with now, and beginning in January, we're going to be once a month a regular show participants with him. So that's an honor, and looking forward to that. And he will be back. He really enjoyed the discussion and is a great guy. And to address your point of spirituality and the message the revolutionary message of a loving God, an unconditionally loving God, that was brought to the world a little over two millennia ago is really something. Because number one, it is profound. Just about every other practice up until then, the deity was much more of like a human, because it was written by men. And doesn't mean it doesn't exist, doesn't mean it does exist, but who the humans interpreted through the lens of the brutality of their civilization, right? So, and now here comes this message of unconditional love, that Jesus the Christ consciousness. And it really resonated clearly with, you know, the totalitarian leadership of the day really tried to snuff it out, and eventually they usurped it as their message, their dogmatic message to rule. But yet the true message of a God that loves you, an unconditional love, has resonated. And that's one of the reasons Christianity has grown over the last 2,000 years. And what's tragic about the individual who, in my opinion, is religious and not spiritual, is when they embrace the dogmatism and the cult-like obedience, the blinders that people put on. Well, this says this in the Bible. Well, the grifter and deviant Cyrus Scofield rewrote the Bible about 130 years ago to make it look like these children of Satan are the chosen people, right? I mean, that's the whole Judeo-Christian thing. And like Andy mentioned, the parasites such as that fat little Stay Puft Mini-Me, John Hagee, and all the other farcical fire and brimstone preachers like Kenneth Copeland or whatever his name is, Copeland. All these other clowns, Creflo, the Right Reverend Creflo A. Dalla, and all these other clowns, you know, Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Al Sharpton, and all these other clowns, you know, they literally are just preying upon the desperate need of individuals who are spiritually, intellectually, emotionally immature, and so they need to be told what to do and herded like sheep, instead of embracing the one of the most important messages in the Bible, which is Luke 17:21, which is the kingdom of heaven resides within. That is true spirituality. That is how you connect with the divine via prayer, meditation, and your spark of the divine, your soul, animates you, and that is the path. And another great quote, I don't remember who said it, I should find it and quote the source, but to paraphrase, there are 1,000 roads to heaven, right? So if you are spiritually mature and you're an adult, and you should be able to discuss anything that resonates with the divine. For example, the Tao Te Ching, the Book of the Way, was written 3,000, 4,000 years before the Bible, and it has awesome, I read it every day, it has awesome lessons for being a human, and many great aphorisms. I mean, there's other, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, even the Quran, even in the Old Testament, the Talmud, there are some great messages of wisdom. But you have to be in connection with what animates you. The kingdom of heaven resides within. As such, you have to be able to be an adult and be able to discuss any of this stuff, not a little petulant child. Oh, I'm a born-again Christian, and if the Bible says this, I have to take it literally. The Bible was never meant to be taken literally. It is a book of wisdom. It is a book of allegory. It is a book to have you understand how to live a life on one level, and then there's all types of deep esoteric insights for those who really want to seek it. But you have these frauds like Fat Little Stay Puft Mini-Me, John Hagee, you know, vomiting quotes from the Scofield Bible, and you have all these idiots. Like I remember several months ago, there was some dipshit general giving a speech at West Point. It'd be your honor to die in service of Israel. You know, like his core belief is Israel's the chosen people. And how can you be such a weak-minded dipshit, and yet they're everywhere?
Yeah, great points. Great points. And, you know, I know that, you know, some people have different viewpoints, and but I guess the essential thing is to really, this is a time for all of us to really find what your spiritual path is and live it. That's what I'm just finding in my own personal life. It's important because things are going to be coming very soon that are going to test all of us. And the reality as we've known it is not going to be in place within probably, I mean, I don't know the timeline, but it's not far off. I believe in the next couple of years, we're going to see some absolutely wild things that very few people imagine to be possible. So the other thing too is, you know, this is the time to find your tribe and to find people of like mind and get close with them. You know, people that are important in your life, it's time to really tell them, you know, hey, you mean something to me and I want to build a closer friendship and learn to work together on a different level. And I think the starting point of that is just to associate yourself with the right people and get closer to them, because this method they have of dividing us up and you know, now we have the vax and the unvaxxed, to completely divide everyone up and have everyone fighting each other. That's been part of the overall plan. But unfortunately, you know, this reality that we know isn't going to be here much longer. So it's time to get ready for some wild times and to put on that spiritual armor, whatever that means to you. And, you know, organized religion is a different force than say you personally sitting down and reading some passages from the Bible or another book of wisdom and praying, you know, to God and for wisdom and guidance and protection. These are all things that are really important, guys. And it's time to really, I think for all of us to sit back and really try to up our game in this respect. That's the message I'm getting personally. I see it in a lot of other people too. And we're being attacked by great evil. And I'll tell you guys, if this isn't the mark of the beast system that they're trying to essentially invoke and materialize right now, I'd sure like to know what the mark of the beast system is going to look like. This is pretty damn close at the very least.
Oh man, excellent points. That's exactly right. I mean, the internationalist elf is using, and they're very effective at using the divide and conquer system, right? And that is what is going on. We now have in every strata of first world society, you have a lot of anger and hatred between subgroups, subcategories of people who should be working together against the true evil, which is the children of Satan, the synagogue of Satan, and who are trying to destroy the divine, which is nature. Nature is divine, so they have all this genetic modification should never be done. I mean, if you want to, and you know, the big ag or a big chemical, big pharma, all these criminal Kabbalist organizations that are literally destroying the earth. I mean, the synagogue of Satan has wiped out 80% of all species, all life on earth in the last century with this ridiculous transformation into the vulgar elf world. And so it's getting worse. The mark of the beast is now their big push. The man who created the messenger RNA technology, Dr. Robert Malone, brilliant guy. He is fighting these Jew parasites who don't know what they're doing and yet arrogantly believe they have. And he's saying this should never be used. This is criminal. And now you've got essentially the farce that is this Omicron virus, which I saw the liars on Veterans Today. I can't believe what deceivers those clowns are. But they post an article that, the wife, the nurse wife, the know-it-all, know-nothing of the head guy there, I can't think of his name right now, but it doesn't matter. They're all just a bunch of frauds, is saying that, oh, my God, the South Africa is being ravaged by the Omicron or Omicron, however you pronounce it, virus, and it's getting in all these five-year-olds. Oh, the world is ending. Oh, the sky is falling. And the reality is the guy who discovered it a doctor in South Africa said it's very mild, you know, it's not really doing anything to anybody. And where that's coming from and why it's getting into children is because the vile Jew, Perla and the Moderna subhumans all knew from day one that this messenger RNA does rewrite your genetics, does rewrite the immune system, hardwires it, and turns every recipient of this potential death jab into Typhoid Mary and Typhoid Larry as a literal off-gasser, shedder, transmitter, super spreader, whatever you want to call it. And that is why children are now getting sick, because they've hardwired the genetics of the doltish parents to literally infect their children. This is the level of the synagogue of Satan. This is the mark of the beast, subhuman evil, unspeakable evil.
Yeah, good points. Absolutely. And, you know, Giuseppe, what do you think is going to happen to the survivors? This is what I posed to Andy. What will happen to the survivors if they get away with it? Because really, let's say the game right now is to create a genocide worldwide and not have anybody notice, you know, to say, oh, no, that's not what's happening. Here's what's happening. It's heart disease, and oh gosh, there's been a big spike in cancer for some reason. That's a mystery, you know. And I'll just tell you, you know, personally, I know two people who took the jab and within under six months came down with a very, very virulent cancer, and the prognosis is not good. And I also know many people that took the jab that are having cardiovascular and heart problems within months of taking this so-called vaccine. So what do you think will happen to the survivors, Giuseppe, if they're able to get away with such a nefarious plan without punishment? Imagine, you know, because this kind of behavior gets worse and worse and worse. It's like a spoiled child. Unless the behavior is corrected, it's going to get more outrageous, more virulent, more deadly, essentially. What will happen to the survivors? How will these people treat the survivors of this genocide if they get away with this? That's something to really ponder.
Oh, wow. What a, that is the distilled question of the day. Well, the way I see it is we're literally at a fork in the road for humanity. You get to go one direction, which is the bad direction. As Robert Kennedy Jr. recently has been saying in his interviews and in his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, which is an awesome book, by the way, really good. They really did a great job just shredding that little tyrant and incompetent. But anyway, if we go to the right, which is the bad fork in the road, we're going to have a first world that looks very much like Australia, New Zealand, and Austria, where these the internationalist elf controlled puppet governments are just dropping the hammer, and you're in the express lane with the pedal to the metal for the Chinese model of social credit score, digital currency. You better obey or your money's gone. Sorry, Goyim. You spoke out of turn. Never question your children's Satan leadership. So that's the right road. And that is a dark, and at that point, the survivors literally must go underground, must fight a guerrilla war just to stay alive. That's the dark path. The left path, which would be the one we're fighting for and why we even do what we do to try and wake up the Goyim cattle, is one where Kennedy and others, we get to a return to real science. We either use the law, if it can be properly prosecuted by real citizens, and then you try and hang Fauci and Biden and Klaus Schwab. I don't know that people like that can be tried publicly. I think they're above the law. I think you need more of a warrior class to take care of business at that level. And then you have a return to science, and the science, real science, not scientism, not corporate science, real science shows that this is a horrific attack upon humanity by the synagogue of Satan, and that you sweep out every aspect of that malignancy, that Jew cancer that infects the first world, And you create a society where adults, mature people, learn to work together, and you know you replace a lot of the gross and transhuman and crimes against nature. You plant a lot of hemp. You create organizations that, you know, this whole ridiculous Green New Steel and this carbon horseshit. You get sane people starting to run the world, essentially. So that's what we need, and that's the higher path. But it sure seems like we're going to the right and having to live in a dystopia.
Yeah, those are great points. I do think, you know, shows like ours and other people really are making an impact, you know. And, you know, this international elf thing is just, it's too funny, and it's an unstoppable meme. It's just taken off like wildfire, just like the Let's Go Brandon thing did. And, you know, as you pointed out in your show last night, you know, there was thousands and thousands of comments of people who know what was going on and are very aware of where our world is going. So, you know, every day we get more people over to our side slowly with, you know, passing out information freely. I mean, we're just basically spending our time for free trying to put out information to people, and many others are doing the same thing. And as the consciousness lifts, as more and more people start to get a clue of what the game really is, it's going to be very difficult to pull off what they have planned. That's, I think, another reason why we've asked, you know, both of us have asked, why are they going so fast? Well, I think they know they're running out of time, and this all has to be done very rapidly before the average, you know, normie or goyim cattle starts to figure out what the game is. What kind of world are we really living in? That's what they've done, is obscure that to so many people. But those veils are being lifted slowly but surely. And so we really are sort of at this crossroads for what kind of reality are we coming into. Like you said, you kind of illustrated the two different realities, and you know, which reality are we going into? And I think it's important to also, you know, pray and visualize, you know, for the reality that we want. And that, you know, people say, oh, that's airy fairy stuff, but prayer does matter and visualization matters. It's the first step in creating a new reality. It's not enough. You have to back it up with work and action and many other things. But, you know, and as I pointed out a few times, you know, why do we need this federal government at all? It's something to really ask ourselves. Oh, we have to have an army. Well, the 50 states could put together some kind of an army. And, you know, the founding fathers and the anti-federalists, many people have pointed out that a founding or a standing army is going to lead to tyranny. The standing army will always serve the interest of tyranny in the end. So what do we need a federal government for? If we had, you know, 50 states that were sort of a confederation, ooh, that's a bad word, confederation. But if you had 50 states that were working together voluntarily on terms they wanted to work on, you'd have sort of 50 laboratories of civilization that would have to compete with one another to provide, you know, a lifestyle and an environment where people want to live in. And it's, you know, this centralized control that's being put down upon the country and the world that is the source of the problem. So I think it's really time to consider what's the point of this federal government. I think it's past the point of no return. There's no reforming it. And unfortunately, this is the apparatus that the enemy is using against us right now, more so than anything else. Although some states are in bad shape too, but if they're all made to compete without the overarching magic shekels of the federal government, you'd have 50 states scrambling to make a better world just out of their own self-interest.
Oh man, what a fascinating concept. I mean, to me, the one of the elephants in the room is that the federal government, with its free printing of magic shekels via the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor a reserve, but they fund the lives of so many people. I mean, there's so many government jobs, so much fiat currency being pumped into keeping this country afloat, that it would be a very difficult and it would be like if you're on a psychotropic drug and you want to get off, you'd have to go 100% federal government fiat money to 75% to 50% to 25%, and making a transition where the states are empowered, and at the same time you protect, you actually use the military to enforce the borders, so no illegal aliens are getting in. And similarly, you really dial back the United States as Luca Brasi being the enforcer, the dim-witted enforcer for the godfather Rothschild in Israel. And so, yeah, I mean, it could be done, and I agree it really should be done, but I don't think it would have to be a very gradual transition.
Well, that's a very pragmatic and realistic point you're making, but the problem is that it's making the assumption that somehow this federal government's going to go away willingly. Oh yeah, we'll dissolve ourselves slowly and make it as painless as possible, you know, which, you know, if we had a sane world, that's the way things would be handled. And I commend you for that thinking. It's very true, but you know, obviously that's not going to happen. This federal government plans on using all the force at its disposal to keep its power and to increase it. And in fact, what they want to do is sort of swallow up the entire economy under the umbrella of the federal government. And that's where the social credit system comes in. That's where the digital currency comes from, where essentially all rules of the monetary system go right out the window. And we're already close to that now. So many of the things that we think, you know, the monetary system is ruled by isn't really in place. It's just there as a show, a little display piece in the window for people to look at and think that it's real.
That's a great
point. So yeah, I mean, it's either way, it's just unfortunately not going to happen. The federal government is not going to magically go away, but it's just something to consider that, the federal government's the bigger enemy than any state government. And now we're seeing certain states, you know, you never know the intentions of these governors or how controlled they are or whatever. I don't want to, you know, get on the bandwagon of Ron DeSantis or the governor of Texas, but there's some resistance and, trying to break away from this uniform path that we're all supposed to accept as the only way forward, because it's science, you know, so I just think that the more divergent thinking and the more we can decentralize everything, that's really the path forward. And that's something we really need to keep remembering, is decentralization is the only way out of this, because if you look at it, it's the centralization of power and control that's getting the whole world to dance to the COVID tune, you know? And of course, let's remember too, that the whole method by which we're supposed to control COVID, you know, lockdowns and keeping people in their houses, this all started in China. They're the ones that came up with these ideas, and then somehow magically the whole world says, oh yeah, that's the only way forward. We got to do what the Chinese did. That's the only way we can handle this. And of course, this has all been gamed out for the last 20 years by think tanks and non-government organizations and, you know, foundations. They've been working on this for minimum 20 years that we know, probably longer. So yeah, that's a lot to consider, Giuseppe. And I wanted to ask you just as a question, have you read Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book on Fauci?
I have not read it in a true read. I perused it, and I got the gist of it, and I'm going to, you know, sit down and read the full thing, but it's really good. I mean, you know, you you can do it as well as I do. You can skim a fast read of a book and get its feel, and it's very well done. You know, but to address your bigger point of your statement, man, we are on the fast track, thanks to the synagogue of Satan, of this new world order, one world government, great reset, build back better, with the lowercase b's, which are intentionally meant to be three sixes. I mean, that's their whole satanic. So, but, you know, we've had the great Paul English, who I'm sure will be back again soon on one of our shows. And he really has a really good view, which is, you know, just turn your back on it all. They have no power. Our greatest strength is our numbers. If we all just say, hey, and it's beginning to happen, especially in the United States and in Europe, where they're like, no, we're not going to take your death jab. We're not going to go along with this lockdown. We're turning our back on it. And clearly the response from the totalitarians is going to be to try and force you to participate. But if enough people turn their backs on it, and enough people within law enforcement in these countries, perhaps within the military, wake up and side with the divine, the light in this battle, as Kennedy calls it in his book, this is the last hill. This is our final fight. If we don't win this, it is going to be the satanic internationalist elf one world government. And it's and you know, Dr. Lorraine Day already says we do have a one world government. That's how they were able to shut down the world with that farcical lockdown 22 months ago. And so it's interesting, Scorpio. It's really, this is it. This is the hill we fight on. It's really true. Kennedy Jr. has it right.
Yeah, that's really true. You know, there's some people that want to say, oh, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he's controlled opposition. He's he's an agent. He's that. Well, you know, I just think, you know, it's so easy to jump to these kind of conclusions. And, you know, look at what the man is doing. Look at, first of all, writing a monumentous book like that, that I believe it has something like 2,000 footnotes in it. So it's extremely well researched, where you can go and reference all the claims made. And, you know, what's interesting too is, you know, as bad as Fauci is, and he's a great brand name on this whole scam, the real question is, who is Fauci answering to? You know, it's, you know, what method by which is he getting his orders? Because he's clearly been a man, a foot soldier for this agenda, and you know, this depopulation agenda, this anti-human agenda. We have to ask ourselves, who does he get his orders from? That's what I'd really like to know. I wondered if Kennedy, I'm sure, doesn't speculate about that in the book, because there's no way to know conclusively, but we can draw certain conclusions based on the available evidence.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is truly, and you combine the real Anthony Fauci with Dr. Judy Mikovits. And again, Judy, we love you, and so sorry you lost your husband. And we're sending you love and healing energy. And I know she's got so many, literally hundreds of thousands of people who she's touched and who are all praying for. So she's going to be all right, but it's such a hard thing to go through when you have such a deep and powerful marriage connection, and to lose your husband. I know it's very, very trying, difficult times. Anyway, you know, in her three books, she lays out in even greater detail what a little traitorous evil monkey Fauci is. And Fauci answers to the Big Pharma criminal organization, and Big Pharma is the assassination wing of the Rothschild banking empire. So once again, everything you need to know, you can find from Godfather 1 and 2, and Big Pharma is essentially Luca Brasi. I mean, they have not brought out a product that is worth anything in 40 years since they're indemnified. They just have their pawns in the FDA, in the CDC, and they just, they're so hell-bent on trying, literally hell-bent, on trying to get everyone to take this death jab. But what people are not looking at is all the garbage other drugs they create, like remdesivir, that's being forced upon any military retiree who goes to the VA. They right away get remdesivir, and it kills half of the people who get it. And that hospitals these days, they're well-meaning and they have some tricks up their sleeve to keep people alive, but in reality, you go to a hospital today, it's a death factor. You're going in there to die. So it's crazy.
Yeah. When I saw, you know, Kennedy on the Corbett report, and one thing that was brought up is like, well, has America gotten more healthy or less healthy since, you know, the 1980s when Dr. Fauci was put into office? And of course, we can't blame that all on him, but I think the big picture is the overall trajectory of the health of Americans and really the world has gone down despite all the great advances in medicine. I mean, somehow the only answer to, you know, all these problems are more pills, more shots, more vaccines, more, you know, control by this medical cartel. When you look back, you know, even 30, 40 years ago, people were much healthier. There's no question. There was less disease. There was doctors. It was a much simpler time in what doctors had to do. Now it's like Kennedy read off all these statistics about how much more chronic disease there is versus the 1980s, autism, just in chronic diseases in general have just skyrocketed. And so we have to ask ourselves, why? Is this all a big accident? Well, no, I don't think so. You know, they've intentionally introduced so many toxins and poisons into the food chain in our environment as part of this overall depopulation program. And so then they give us the answer, which is, you know, more shots and more pills.
Well, that's exactly right. Well stated. And what people need to do is step back and look at what the internationalist elf, their real agenda is. They deceived the federal government in 1996 to allow for the public consumption of glyphosate, which destroys the gut biome. Before it was repurposed and remarketed, it was an industrial pipe cleaner. That's the level of desiccant that it is.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Monsanto, the Sephardic Jews bought it, the company, and then began repurposing it. And
never, that's definitely an elf company.
Sure. Without a doubt. And they should have never been allowed to come to market. And that is now, there's real science that shows that the genetic damage done to now grandparents and great grandparents and for the births and the generation that followed, they are born with messed up gut biome. They are born with genetic damage. So that's one of the things that the internationalist elf has brought to the table. And that is like a Mike Tyson 1-2 punch with amazing level of toxins and poisons and experimentation, human DNA, aborted fetal tissue, and those babies were alive when they killed them. So that's part of the whole Jew human sacrifice thing that occurs constantly with the children of Satan. And so you've got that injected into people. So the internationalist elf is never, they want to depopulate, but they're doing it slowly, but so they can also pump up these amazing bubbles of wealth transfer. And so what essentially their real agenda is to slowly depopulate, slowly transfer the wealth of the Goyim cattle, slowly enslave them in a corrupt medical system that does nothing but ameliorate the symptoms with pills and jabs, doesn't heal, doesn't cure anything. You know, you've got Ty Bollinger with his phenomenal investigations into the cancer industrial complex. All these things from the international elf make you sick, give you cancer, and then you're paying and losing all your wealth and property to simply survive under the system of the international elf.
Yeah. And, you know, I think ultimately we're dealing with satanic forces here. Yep. And you could use a lot of different words. That would be the more Christian way of putting it. But we're dealing, I think, really, the international elf is serving a dark energy. And I don't mean that Uncle Shlomo that owns a deli down the street
right. Necessarily
at all. But these people that are on top, that are inside the circle here. And, you know, we've seen, too, that the international elf is willing to sacrifice smaller elves for a greater cause.
The lesser elf.
The big elf is willing to sacrifice little elf.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're dealing with a cabal, a network, a criminal crime syndicate that is truly serving a dark master. And again, this goes back to the spiritual, you know, spiritual manifests in this world as the physical. But, you know, on a spiritual level, these people really are serving a dark God that goes back to antiquity, as you've referenced Baal and some of the other things. So this is nothing new. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. And it's this continuous game. I think, as Andy said, it's the children of Satan versus the children of God. And I really do think there's something to this theme. I think there's a reptilian genetic element to this as well. And I think this goes into, you know, possibly beings from another realm that are involved in this, not to excuse the actions of anyone that we know here on Earth, but I think there's a higher force at work here, both on the good and the evil.
Oh man, well said. I mean, you know, there's infinite permutations to the experience in this reality, but it does always boil down to a very simple linear formula, good versus evil, right? And of course, there's infinite shades of gray, blah, blah, blah. Of course, you can see it that way, but really, it's not that difficult to see one side is absolute evil trying to treat the vast majority of humanity like human cattle, and the other side wants to just live as decent humans and have some modicum of safety, of healthy food, potable water, of some security, not live in a war zone. And that's another thing that the International Elf does all the time with their banking, is they send in their mercenaries, NATO and the First World, to constantly create wars for the Greater Elf Project. And it's just insane. It's just insane what is being done by these subhumans. And that, you know, and you know, it's just, I mean, there is no way to get beyond looking at all of this. It's so obvious, but a vast majority of First World citizens these days choose to employ cognitive dissonance, and they're literally entranced by a very powerful mind control, and you know, which we call the Elfacost, right? I mean, 6 million elves did not die. It's just not. And so,
yeah, I always wondered how they baked 6 million cookies.
How did Santa bake 6 million cookies in just
a lot of cookies?
Five ovens. Yeah,
it's a lot of cookies.
That's a lot of cookies.
Yeah, as Blackbird9 was pointing out yesterday, that this is sort of their raison d'etre for victimhood, is the Holocaust myth. And, you know, that's something that needs to be chipped away at without fear, because, you know, they want to control our ideas and our free speech through fear and the idea, oh, you're going to be put in jail for something you've said. Well, that's insane. You cannot have a free civilization without free speech. It's really the fundamental platform of a free civilization. Without that, you really don't have anything. And hey, you know what? People are going to say things you don't like, you know, put on your big boy pants and deal with it. And the reason why the International Elf is so afraid of this is that in a marketplace of ideas and a free and open exchange of ideas and thinking, deceptive thinking really won't stand up very well. Once you have a population that, you know, it's exposed to some good thinking, some good ideas, and the ability to think through problems logically, the deceptive thinking isn't going to stand up to scrutiny very well. That is the reason why they must always cry out for censorship in the name of anti-elfism or whatever, you know.
You know, that yesterday's show with the great Frederick C. Blackburn, a.k.a. Blackburn 9, that guy is so bright and so with it in so many levels. I really love what he does and admire his body of work and admire his character that he overcame, you know, literally a life-destroying attack by the elves. And he just posted, and that was one of the funnest shows ever yesterday. There's so much humor, and it was really great. Really enjoyed it. But he just posted.
Yeah, he survived a great elf pile-on with lots of elves biting his ankles.
He did. And he just posted the follow-up to the talentless elf Seth Rogen, who, he's whining that Hollywood actor blames failure of his show on white supremacists. And he just tweeted, Seth Rogen, we really pissed off tens of thousands of white supremacists with our new show, Santa Inc. And then there's on Twitter immediately 10,000 replies all saying, but there's no audience, bro. I'm not wife and do not intend to protect anyone. I'm not white, rather, not wife. I'm not white and do not intend to protect anyone, but your show is not that good. And then more and more, and then another dude texted, I've seen garbage television shows in my life. Heck, at least 15 times I've seen garbage television shows, but I'm not going to complain. I don't really see garbage television shows as an extension of myself, though. One time, a garbage television show left me a cool knife. So it's just like the classic thing where all the internationalist elf and their talentless propped up minions like Seth Rogen, all they have is ad hominem. So I guess tomorrow he's going to go from blaming white supremacists to claiming people are anti-Semitic, right? That's all they have. They can never take accountability for their actions. They have to always blame someone else in an insulting way, an ad hominem. They can't actually say, oh, well, my actions and the actions of my satanic tribe really have brought this on us. Oh, no, they can't do that. Instead, we're all anti-Semites, anti-homophobes. And all we're doing factually is calling out that the internationalist elf, one of their ways to, as the cancer they are, eat away at society is to champion the flotsam and jetsam of the society, the fringe elements, which have every right to exist on the fringes and under the rocks where they belong. But instead, we now have the tranny being, oh, my God, a tranny.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And you know, again, if you have a free civilization, there's going to be people that live their lives in the way you don't like.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that these people need to be touted as heroes or put up on a pedestal for our children to look up to and to emulate. That's the problem. So really the big picture here is you can weaponize anything. You can weaponize a hammer.
Yep.
You can use a hammer to hit someone on the head with, or you can use a hammer to build a house.
Right.
And so what this tribe of international elves are quite fond of doing is weaponizing everything and making it into a weapon. Whereas, you know, to have good people and a good civilization, you have to have some kind of moral code by which you all agreed to live by. And, you know, Christianity certainly served that function throughout most of, you know, at least the peak of Western civilization was sort of under that umbrella. There's just no denying that. But again, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, have some kind of theocracy. I think that's dangerous as well. But
right.
People have to have liberty. They have to have their own ability to create their existence by the work of their own hand and their own mind without constant interference by a bunch of little elves that want to steer us into the rocks and keep people from growing. Because once humanity reaches a certain point, the same old tricks just aren't going to work anymore. And I think that's their biggest fear.
Oh, wow. Well said. That's really powerful. Yeah, I mean, the internationalist elf is a cancer, and they've subverted the traditions and tribal beliefs of every other culture except their own, and then they zealously guard that, right? And so, you know, in a world without the internationalist elf, which really needs to occur, I mean, they've crossed the line. This is a hot war being prosecuted by the internationalist elf. They are trying to wipe us out. Robert Kennedy Jr. is so right. This is the hill we fight on. This is the hill we die on. I'm not going to live a life under the one world government of the internationalist Jew. You know, it can't be done. So what's sad, though, is how many individuals are really weak-minded and really entranced by the Elficost and all this silly lies that can be disproved in 20 minutes. You know, give Jim Rizzoli, give John Kaminsky, give Dennis Fecho 20 minutes. They'll show you it's all a lie. We can show you it's all a lie. We do show you it's all a lie. And clearly the people listening or viewing here get it. But it's so funny how apoplectic the Goyim cattle, who are entranced in this hypnotic cognitive dissonance, they get. They actually want to defend the internationalist elf and claim that, oh, they're so poor. You know, why can't you be an adult? Why can't you think? Why can't you critically think? Why can't you actually just discuss this stuff? And facts should rule the day. These are the facts. But it's not the case. But in summary, the idea being that it's never going to go back to the way it was. They are out to wipe us out. And so, you know, real men like we are fighting back, and we're going to fight back harder and harder. And we need the majority the majority of real men in every first world country to step up and get things done. It's time. Wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting too is, you know, we always have to remember they can't do it without us, without our own complicity and essentially our willingness to build our own prison. That's what they're asking us to do by, you know, going along with the vaccine passport, going along with being afraid and wearing a slave mask and all this. They're asking us to build our own prison. And we always have to remember they can't do it without us. And, you know, it's interesting. Last night I took my mother out for her birthday for dinner. And we went to this restaurant here in San Diego. It was just absolutely packed. I mean, a huge restaurant. The place was just jam-packed full of people. Maybe I saw, you know, two or three people walk in with a mask on. Because I'm always looking, I'm always wanting to see where it stands on the masking and the fear level. And even the workers there, I think I saw one guy wearing a mask. No one else was. So I know a lot of these people got vaccinated, unfortunately, but it just seems one thing that's in the air right now is I think more and more people are saying, you know, screw this. We've already wasted 2 years of our lives. Our lives are all, you know, very short. Even if you live to 80 or 90 or 100 years old, it goes by very, very fast.
Right.
And I just think that it's really in the air. I'm feeling this, that more and more people are just unwilling to comply. There's still plenty of people that are, but it just seems to me that there is something in the air where more and more people just don't want to play along anymore.
Oh, well said. That is exactly what is going on, and people are starting to wake up. I mean, it was even what was it? Let's see. This is December, so it was March, early March. The last concert I went to see at the Lincoln Theater down in the District of Criminals was the great Steve Hackett, the brilliant lead guitarist for Genesis when Genesis was a prog band with Peter Gabriel in it. And then when Gabriel left, they did a couple albums with Phil Collins as the lead singer. And when Hackett was still there, and Hackett was the prog guy, and they're just brilliant. And that's one of my favorite bands of all time. And it is to this day. And even on March 9th, that's my brother's birthday. That's right. I can remember that day. You could even tell in the crowd that people were a little spooked, and is this real? Are we all going to die? And I was like, I don't think this is real. And people were starting to wear masks, a few of them. And, you know, I was of the mind that if they've released the bioweapon, we're all going to die real quick. It's not going to be, you know, within a month, we're going to know. And it wasn't. And it was all a farce. You know, like Judy Mikovits has pointed out and others, they put something in the flu shots in Italy. They released something in Iran. They released something in Wuhan, if that was even real. But they so to speak, poison the well in certain areas to create this stampede of fear that, oh, it's everywhere. Oh, my God. You know, and then they kill the elderly and traitors like Fredo Cuomo put these poor locked down these nursing homes with people spreading the bioweapon, so they kill a lot of low-hanging fruit, and then they build up this momentum, this deception, like the internationalist Jew always does. It's always a deception. And so, you know, there was no pandemic. There hasn't been a pandemic in over a century. You know, the Spanish flu wasn't a pandemic. It was an experimental injection gone horribly wrong. And then more people, as Fauci himself wrote, die from wearing masks and getting lobar pneumonia and lung disease, then from bacterial pneumonia, then from the so-called pandemic. In the first world and in the world in general, there's never been a pandemic because there's too much potable water, there's too much sanitation, there's too much bleach. There, you know, sane people know if you got someone sick up until 2 years ago, isolate and quarantine the sick, not the healthy. So it's all ludicrous. This is all the international elf trying to create their new world order, their build back better 666. It's all a scam. And even the average trusting sheeple who thinks that voting matters and wears their Trump MAGA hat, even they're starting to wake up now and realize that, holy cow, you know, they murdered my father. They've made my athletic son sick and damaged his heart, so he can't play sports. He can barely walk now. So that's what the international elf has brought to the table, and it's sad that it's taking this long. But more and more people are starting to wake up, and that's an excellent described vignette you just shared. And here's the laugh of it, right? The stadiums are full for sports ball, so you have to wear a mask to go in. Take off your mask when you're sitting packed in like sardines in the seats in a stadium. Take off your mask to watch the sports and eat your nachos or what have you. Get up, wear your mask to go take a leak, but then come back and take your mask off. And, you know, real infectious disease, everybody would be sick then. But guess what?
Yeah. They're not. And that's very elf-like thinking, isn't it? And it's just sort of getting people used to just following orders no matter how illogical it might be. You just follow the orders, and it's really part of this conditioning process that they want to bring us all into. But I see a lot of people, even people who are wearing masks, they have it down below their nose now, and so it's an indication of that they're still, you know, submitting to the slave mask. But the fact that they're putting it below their nose shows they really don't give a shit, because if they did, they'd have it all the way up, you know. People are coming to it at their own speed. But, you know, one thing I try to do, man, whenever I'm in town is just talk to people. I'll just go up to someone, start talking to them, and try to plant a little seed. You know, everywhere I go, man, I'm like Johnny Appleseed in that way.
That's awesome, man. That is really, really the way it needs to be. And I'm the same way. And although I must admit, I've been saying it on the shows, I'm becoming more and more of a misanthrope here in the greater District of Criminals, because you got a lot of true believers still wearing masks. It's funny, like for Thanksgiving last week, I had to do the shopping, and I was in the stores during normal hours, which I really loathed. But, you know, around here, sadly, you still have like 85% people wearing masks, and they're giving me the side eye. But there's more people like me now. You know, 20 months ago, I was the only one in a store not wearing a mask, and you'd get all these little lemmings at the organic store trying to bitch me out.
Yeah.
And
this happened to me. I've walked in the store where I am the only one out of like maybe 50 people in like a Trader Joe's. I went there a couple of weeks ago. I was the only one out of maybe 50 people not wearing a mask. And I just said, fuck it. I don't care. Doesn't matter. Whatever. You guys wear a mask. I'm not wearing one, and whatever.
Yep.
So look, I want to thank you for being on the show, Giuseppe. And I really want to thank Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, just a tremendous book he's written, and a real thinker. I really like the way his mind works and where he takes things and his style. He's a man of honor and integrity. And that means a lot, you know. That's something we all have to strive for in our lives, and we all short of it sometimes. Yeah,